and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries.
Are you feeling good? I hope so. It's a beautiful weekend here in Central Florida. Welcome to the American Adversaries. That's right, our three-hour Sunday evening classic tour just now leaving the docks. Bon voyage! No, stay with us.
See ya.
Welcome to the show, folks. That is Aubrey Khan. I am Christopher Hart. We're coming to you live on FM 105.5, AM 660 The Answer, and 1520 WBZW as we start six full hours of great live radio here tonight on Salem Media Group. Affiliate here in Orlando. Jeff Sinis once again is on the bridge.
How you doing?
He's got everything lined up for us tonight, so give us a call, 407-774-8255. We got a lot to talk about and only 3 hours to do it, so we're going to try to cram it in, but of course we'll love to speak with you at any moment. Aubrey's going to be here the first hour of the show. Carl's going to join us with his corner toward the end of this hour of the show. And the next hour of the show, we're going to have Frederick Seltjen, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It might be Seltjen. We'll ask him when he joins us. Seltjen. Anyway, we'll
just
find out for
Fred.
Sure. That's one of the what's the first question I'll ask him, right?
What do we call you, Fred?
That's right. He is a counterterrorism expert who will be speaking tomorrow night over there on Red Bug Road at the Fellowship Church. That's right there by Tuscaloosa, Red Bug and Tuscaloosa Boulevard. And, of course, you are invited to that. It's being sponsored by Act of Orlando, and that's Act for America Orlando Branch. And let's see. Then later on in that hour, we're going to be joined by Melissa Coates, and she is a professional wrestler, just got back from Japan wrestling over there, and just became last year a naturalized American citizen from Canada.
There you go.
So what'd you say a little while ago?
Maybe you should marry Ted Cruz.
Make him all legal, right? And then, of course, Sunny, our California girl, is going to be joining us, and Kathy Santomassino with more of the presidential trivia that she enlightened us with last week. like Jumbo. Did you hear about Jumbo?
No.
Well, then you're going to have to go into the archive to find out about Jumbo. Anyway, so we got a big lineup for you tonight, so I hope you enjoy it. If you're waiting for the Oscars, we'll be talking about that a little bit with Sunny. Al, the shakedown artist, Al Not So Sharpton, was protesting in Los Angeles this morning, mere blocks from the theater where the Oscars are going to be awarded tonight.
Well, isn't he going to be emigrating if Trump's
the
nominee?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. That's another good reason why we should elect Trump, right? All these Hollywood people that say they're going to leave the country.
You know what? It's got more chance of having a month of Sundays than that happening.
Oh, yeah, they'll stay here. And then the KKK made an appearance in... No, not on the Trump campaign trail.
Oh, they did.
In Los Angeles. So Sonny's going to fill us in on some details from that.
That might have to do with the Oscars again, right?
I'm not quite so sure. There was evidently a KKK rally in L.A. the other day that consisted all of about probably a dozen supremacists, and they were set upon by some anti-KKK protesters, and somewhere along the line, somebody pulled a knife, and some people got stabbed. No one got killed, I don't think. But as I said, we'll get an update from Sonny on that tonight. But yes, it happened again. They did it again. It happened again this morning. Did you hear
it?
Well, the intelligentsia, the echelon of thought in this country, the upper echelon of thought.
Are you talking about the gops or the libs?
I'm talking about, in this case, the liberal media talking heads.
Oh, those ones.
Yeah, it happened again this morning on Chuck Todd's, he does the NBC show now.
Chuck Todd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see, meet the press, or beat the press, or whatever. But he this morning, once again, made the comparison.
Between?
the Republican primary, at least, and the WWE. He compared it to, more specifically, WWE Raw. Talking about, in particular, this last week with the debate and the back and forth between Rubio, mostly Rubio and Trump, but you can throw a little heavy dose of Cruz in there, too, calling this the WWE Raw. And then he went further to say, and this shows that he's a fan of sorts, or at least somebody on his staff is, because they knew a little bit. And the problem with knowing a little bit is you don't necessarily...
It's dangerous.
Well, yeah, exactly. He said that what Rubio has done is accepted what he called, get this, Jeff, the Ric Flair mindset.
Oh.
Because Ric Flair has this saying that he had when he'd prayed around as the WWE, the world champions. Mm-hmm. He was how many times was he a champion? 14, 16-time champion, right?
Right. Yeah, something about that.
And he used to have a saying that to be the man, you got to beat the man.
I thought it had something to do with those pink wrestling shorts he wore under his chest.
No. That's not Ric Flair. No, Ric Flair was a quite the wrestler, and he was a good. He had great wrestling technique, and he could brawl. He could do it all, and he's still actually working for the WWE because his daughter Charlotte now is the Divas Champion with the WWE. Now he had a few other sayings too. One of the ones that was repeated often was, how did it go? Something like, I'm a jet flying, limo riding, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, son of a gun.
Sounds about
That's
right.
That's Ric Flair, buddy.
So, blonde hair and all.
So Chuck Todd this morning said that Rubio's taking up the Ric Flair mindset. And however, he got the saying, to be the man, you have to beat the man wrong. That's the way Flair said it. In other words, when I'm the champion, if you want to be me, you got to come and beat me, baby, right? Well, this morning, old Chuck Todd kind of turned it around a little bit. He said Rubio's mindset was to beat the man, you got to be the man. So, in other words, what he's saying is, in order to beat Trump, you got to get down in the gutter and you got to be, talk all this trash talk like Rubio's doing these last few days. And this just demonstrates, and I, once again, this is an observation of his about Rubio, but if this is the assumption by Rubio that that's what is making Trump what he is, he's getting it all wrong, you see? What Trump is doing when he goes after these other politicians, the way his followers see it, is that he's attacking something much bigger than that individual. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, in his closing remark the other night, he set himself apart in that, look, these guys are all politicians. They all are. They're all about, he included, I guess, Carson in that. But he said they're all politicians. They're all talk and no action. I'm a businessman. I'm here to get things done.
Although he's a politician, too.
Well, but he's playing in the political world, and he's showing them how it can be done. But what is the subtle message is that Rubio is missing is that when he attacks Rubio or Cruz, per se, the followers see it as him attacking the establishment. Or the way things are. And that these men, whether you like it or not, represent that. Why? Because they're both members of the United States Senate, which is the epitome, if you will, of the establishment and it getting its ways. In other words, that's where they actually get the payoff, right? Both parties. Both parties. He's separating himself in that sense from the party much more than he is from the individual. So this is what Rubio is missing. And by the way, the polls show he's not getting any bounce out of this. And now he's starting to get the backlash of, well, gosh, if Trump was down in the gutter and now you're down in the gutter, what does it say about you? Right? You can't be above the fray. Now we're going to have to start questioning your demeanor, your temperament, your ability to be calm under pressure. I mean, it gets to that point. So, but it in terms of both Rubio, and I'm going to say a few words about Cruz here in a few minutes, in terms of both of them and the way they are going after Trump, I'm all for it. And here's why. Here's the one thing that Rubio is absolutely correct about. Should Donald Trump, and this goes for any one of them, you can replace the word, the name Trump with Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Ben Carson, and I dare say even John Kasich. Whoever's going to get it is going to get a hot coffee enema. That's the thing, from the press, and it's going to be even worse from the Democrats. So the more he gets used to this sort of thing now, whoever he is, the better off he is going to be for it. So I say bring it on, fellas. Bring it on. And if Trump's not up to it, then we're going to find out right quick. But if he is, we're going to find that out too. And don't be disappointed either way that it goes. My money right now, is on Trump. Because these people are missing the larger point. And I don't recall the person's name. It might have been Andrea Mitchell, but I don't want to give her credit because I don't think it was, actually. But there was one of the other talking heads that actually got it right this morning when they said that the thing about Trump is he has the most optimistic message of them all. As a matter of fact, that's right, it was on CBS News, and when they were doing, they did some polls, and I'll get into the other results and some more poll results after this break. But CBS did a poll asking who has the most optimistic message. Now, a lot of people would say it would be Rubio, right? Or whoever your guy is, that's who you might think it is. Trump, running away with it, 48%. Rubio second, 24%. Carson third, 15%. Kasich fourth at 13%. By far and away, he has the most optimistic message. That, and I've been saying this from the very start, is the root. That is the foundation of the man's success. The rest of it is just the show that goes on in the ring. The political mayhem, as Hacksaw Jim Duggan so aptly calls it, so correctly calls it. We'll be right back with more of the American Adversaries. Please stay with us.
More political mayhem is on the way. You're listening to the American Adversaries on 660 WORL. If you can take it.
Well, that will remain to be seen, whether Donald can take it or not. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I think you would agree with me that up until now, all he's been doing is launching bylines, headlines. There's been no substance. He hasn't backed it up with what he's going to do or how he's going to do it besides build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. And now McConnell, the leader of the Senate, the coward in chief, claims that GOP lawmakers will sacrifice the White House and drop Trump like a hot rock if he's the nominee. Mr. McConnell has begun preparing senators for the prospect of a Trump nomination, assuring them that if it threatened to harm them in the general election, they could run negative ads about him to create space between him and the Republican senators seeking re-election. Now, I don't know about you, but this kind of infighting and to put it bluntly, bitchiness.
Easy does it now.
Is not good for the conservative voter.
I disagree. I totally disagree. It's the conservative voter who's speaking out here. See, that's what a lot of people are missing. Trump would be nothing if he didn't have throngs of people coming out and supporting the guy. Let me finish. What did you call Mitch McConnell? You used an adjective in describing the man.
The coward in chief.
Okay, right there it is. That is what Trump builds his strength upon. This coward in chief, who a lot of people perceive as a huge part of the problem in Washington, D.C., attacking Donald Trump makes Donald Trump bigger and stronger. And so they can go ahead and play that game at their own risk. They can do that at their own risk. And by the way, I think that's part of what's motivating Marco Rubio. I'm beginning to think that he's trying to poison the well, because the way he's going about trying to attract Trump's voters, and at some point he's going to have them, is to belittle them. Saying that they're being conned by the con artist who is Donald Trump. I'm here to tell you, the con artists are the politicians. It is the con artists who are running this country and have been running this country for quite some time. And they've been giving in to other con artists like that shakedown artist Al Not-So-Sharpton, who's in the news today. The con artistry is thick and heavy. There's no question about that. There's absolutely not. And as a matter of fact, Marco Rubio himself, some might characterize as a con artist, seeing as how he got elected, you know, being the champion of the Tea Party. So, you know, it's, you know, Trump's playing right. You know, he's right in where he's at. Now, in terms of specifics, have you ever read his book, Crippled America?
No, I have not.
Well, perhaps you should, because in that book, he gets into some degree of specifics. Now, there is obviously there's going to be a lot left to be filled in. But here's part of his argument. And I think a lot of people see the logic in it. And that is that I can, as a matter of fact, I've heard other people say the same thing about these other guys' plans, that as soon as they get to be elected president, all of their great detailed plans, they're going to do this and they're going to do that, are going to be out the window, because they're going to suddenly have to deal with Congress. And Congress has made it clear they're going to have their agenda. So there will be something in between. But there will not be, and this is why I cringe when I hear these commercials where Ted Cruz at the end goes, I'm going to do exactly what I say I'm going to do. Well, then either you're going to be a dictator or you're going to disappoint a lot of people, because no politician does exactly what he says he's going to do unless he's conning us into trying to convince us that making an attempt to do something is somehow accomplishing or fulfilling a promise. No, as far as I'm concerned, promises go unfulfilled if they are not actually carried through. And so it's, you know, all of these great old details. And by the way, I don't think very many people, especially in this day and age, pay attention or care about the detailed plans. They are looking for someone who looks, feels, acts, smells, and even tastes like a leader. And they don't care much about anything else. By the way, do you want to know, when CBS did its poll and asked the Republican, the electorate out there, the GOP electorate, who they thought the most conservative was? Who would you say?
Well, to me, the most conservative is Cruz.
And you, along with 70% of the rest of the people.
Right.
Well, why aren't they voting for Trump? Most of these conservative people, excuse me, are for Cruz. Most of these conservative people are voting for Trump. You see, Trump's message is positive. The rest of these guys' message is lost in detail. He's talking big philosophical type stuff, and they're talking little bitty, you know, puny nothing, Senate mumbo jumbo nonsense. You see, and so people aren't looking for detailed plans. This is why these people are getting lost in this. This is what I mean. They're blaming Trump, like Chuck Todd this morning was blaming Trump because now he's gotten Rubio into the Ric Flair mindset and doing the WWE stuff. What Trump is revealing, he is making it plain. He has pulled back the curtain on the wizard. And there it is. And because he pulled back the curtain, people are somehow thinking that he's responsible for the wizard. No, he's just revealing what has always been there. For 5.5 years, I've been saying this has been going on long before Trump came along. Now these people are beginning to see it. Only they think he's responsible for it. No, they're missing the whole point here. He's just demonstrating in plain, raw terms for everybody to see what has always been going on.
I think everybody knows what's been going on, Chris. There was no need to try and pull the curtain, as you say. What he has done is he's pulled a curtain around himself, and people have forgotten his past.
Oh, I don't think people have forgotten his past at all.
I believe they have. And what they're doing is they're clinging to hope. And we're going to get more hope and change. And we don't need hope and change. We need this country to go back to the Constitution.
Go back to the Constitution. And how might you say that is going to happen? By electing Ted Cruz? What's he going to do to go back to the Constitution? Appoint conservative Supreme Court justices? It was pointed out this morning that, he says it was George W. Bush's appointee, but in fact, he was wholeheartedly full on board for Mr. Johnny Boy Roberts.
Right.
It's a roll of the dice with any of these guys. And by the way, the justices that Trump has suggested, and contrary to what Mr. Cruz has been saying, he has suggested people other than his sister, a guy by the name of Pryor, and a woman, and her name escapes me right now, but both are widely recognized as very proven, case-proven, conservative federal judges. So don't give me that stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of hope in this. How do you think Barack Obama got elected twice? This is what the American public craves. They crave hope and optimism. They crave hope and change. Obama promised it. He didn't deliver.
He delivered for a lot of people. He delivered hope and change exactly as he promised it.
And if Trump does the same, we'll be in a whole lot better shape, won't we? How about that?
I don't see Trump delivering the way that he says he's going to, because he's going to be making too many deals. And the deals that he's going to make are going to be with Democrats.
The deals he's going to make are going to be with the people who are going to be willing to make deals with him. This is part of the brilliance of Donald Trump. He's going to have both sides of Congress groveling at his feet because both sides are going to want to make deals with him. I see that as a step in the right direction. You see, here's something that I think actually, you know, everybody's got their bad scenario if Trump gets elected. He's a bad, bad man, according to the Beck boys. He'll destroy the Republican Party, and he'll make a mockery of the United States, according to Michael Medved. Well, how about let's look at it on the reverse side? All right, the polls are beginning to show what we have seen all along, and that is he gets support from Republicans. He gets support from independents, and lo and behold, he's even getting support from Democrats, some of who have even changed their party affiliation here in the state of Florida so that they can vote for him in the primary. So let's imagine this scenario. He gets elected president of the United States with a wide-ranging demographic, which gives him a huge, what do they call it? Well, he gives him a lot of political capital. Okay. He gives him momentum. And he gets in and he sets to work. And he brings a different mindset to Washington, D.C. And instead of appointing a bunch of political hacks to be his advisors, he goes to the Pentagon. He gets the best of the generals. He goes to the business world. He gets the best of the people in the business world, people who he knows, who he's worked with before, who have worked on deals with him before. And he changes the whole way of doing business in Washington, D.C. And lo and behold, the Congress gets on the bandwagon and they say, look, this guy's got a mandate. That's the word I was searching for a minute ago. Got a mandate. Let's dramatically lower the income tax on corporations. And we'll lower it for people, too. But mainly, let's lower it on corporations, because that's what will bring the capital back to the United States. Okay, he wants to build a wall. Well, we don't have to build the whole wall, but let's give him a section or two so he actually gets the process going. All right, he begins to rebuild the military. He begins to change the face of America around the world. Why can't people perceive this as being just as possible as him ruining everything? We can't limit ourselves in our fears. This guy is a man for the ages, if you will. He is a man for the time, for the world we live in. Have you ever read the book, The Lord of the Flies?
Yes, I did. It was a book many years ago.
Okay. Doesn't our world today, I'm not talking about so much the United States, but the world in general, appear much like those kids on the island with all the weird wackos running around and stuff? You need somebody who is, shall we say, accustomed to that world. And let's take Eva's call before we go to the break, because she's been patiently waiting. Eva, thank you for calling.
Yes. I just want to say I'm a Christian conservative. I'm a Christian first, in America Next. And I've been involved in politics all my life. And what I see since Thursday night with the Republican Party, I've already voted. But what I see with the Republican Party, I was like Rush Limbaugh, anybody but Hillary. But I refuse to vote if Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz, either one, because they claim the title of being a Christian. And they are not acting like it. Now, first of all, I agree with Ted Cruz about the Constitution, but he's representing Christ, and nothing the TV you see is Christian. Nobody can argue that.
Yeah.
And you've got to walk the talk, and they are not walking the talk. One thing about Donald Trump, what you see is what you get.
Yep.
And he says he's made mistakes, and a lot of these talk show hosts and people say, well,
tough guy.
All right, welcome back to the show. Eva, are you still with us?
I am.
All right, go ahead and finish your thought. You were in the process.
I was just going to say, what Donald Trump has done is he showed little people like me how the inside works, and I don't like it. And as a Christian, I don't want to be the part of it. And God says, render to Caesar what's Caesar, and God's what's God. They're playing Caesar's game, but they're not acting like Christians, and they have a responsibility to act like Christians.
Well,
they claim the title.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Again, you don't expect the media or anybody else to comply. Yeah, they don't profess to be Christians.
Yeah. Well,
they are going to the world, as we say.
Eva, didn't Donald Trump say that he's a Christian?
He did, but again, Audrey, only God knows somebody's heart.
And he doesn't hold that out as be one of the main reasons why you should vote for him.
Only God knows the heart, and we're not to judge.
Right. So,
the thing of it is, we have limited judgments. We only see what people's actions are, and the media goes back what he's done the last 37 years, hiring those people.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, what I did 37 years ago, I'm not the same person I was 37 years ago.
Lord, I'm not either. Either I'd be dead or in jail.
Go there. I mean, that's stupid.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But here's one thing I want to say.
All right, and then I got to let you go. Okay.
Okay. Yesterday was a South Carolina primary.
Right.
Trump got 60,000 absentee people voting. You know how many Democrats voted absentee in South Carolina?
No, I didn't catch that one.
5,000.
Yeah, there's definitely a huge enthusiasm gap between the Republicans and the Democrats that's showing up at the polls this year. Yeah.
But what gets me is every one of these talking heads say he can't beat Hillary. Give me a break.
Yeah, they said the same thing about Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter.
All right. Exactly.
And by the way, Republicans back then that were making fun of Ronald Reagan, some even saying that they wouldn't support him should he become the nominee. Same old song and dance that we're hearing right now. Okay, Eva, thank you for calling.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate
Bye-bye.
You being out there. And by the way, when Rubio comes out saying this stuff about Trump hiring these and had to pay $1 million settlement 35 years ago because some Polish workers were helping demolish a building, didn't help build Trump Towers, were helping demolish a building that was on the land where they were going to build Trump Towers, by the way, who Donald Trump did not hire, but who a subcontractor who Donald Trump hired. Okay? And so it's just a part of this, get settle this and let's get, move on. He paid $1 million. All right? But it wasn't he who hired these Polish workers. All right? And in terms of the taxes, all right, this is where I'm really disappointed with Ted Cruz. And I think a lot of it goes to a guy by the name of Jeff Rowe. Jeff Rowe is Mr. Cruz's campaign manager. And I got a feeling he fired the wrong guy last week when he fired, what was his name, Rick Snyder or whatever his name was?
Mm-hmm.
Because Jeff Rowe has got a reputation of using, as they put it, sharp elbows, doing questionable things in elections that aren't necessarily illegal, but you would think
borderline.
Yeah, you know, it's playing rough, if you will, which is okay. As I say, all's fair in love and war in politics. And as far as Rubio and Cruz go after Trump and all the stuff that we're talking about, bring it on, because I want to see it dealt with. This is what the process is all about. And if Trump's not up to it, we'll find out. But if he is, you better be ready for that, too. And if it doesn't matter to people, you better be ready for that, three. And Mr. Rowe, I think, is behind part of Cruz's argument. See, really, Cruz has won his argument. Cruz's argument was, I'm the most conservative. Look at me. Well, 70% of Republicans agree. The problem is, that's not what they're basing their vote on, a lot of them anyway. They're basing it on something else that he's not delivering. So he needs to figure out what that is and deliver it. Instead, he chooses to go after Trump with innuendo. Innuendo about taxes. And suggesting things that you would not be able to find out from taxes anyway. Like this morning, he's talking about taking up, what was the last doofus's name? Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney's argument. What are you afraid of something? Is there a bombshell in their taxes? And oh, by the way, Cruz is not released. He's released 9 years of supposed taxes. Well, in fact, he released 5 years, and then the last 4 years are summaries. They're not actually tax forms, all right? And he finally did that today, I guess. Anyway, to get back to Trump and the innuendo, which, once again, this is cool because this is what the Democrats are going to do. So, in a way, Rubio and Cruz are doing Trump a favor, should he get the nomination, because this is going to be sort of old news by then, or he's at least going to know better how to deal with it when it comes up again, and it will, should he go up against the Democrats. Cruz is suggesting that perhaps Donald Trump has ties with the mob in New York. Well, you probably can't get anything done construction-wise in New York unless the mob's got their fingers in it somewhere. I know it used to be that way anyway. I don't know if it's that way anymore since the FBI has really devastated the crime families up there. But he suggests that we would find that out from reviewing Donald Trump's taxes. Well, I don't know what forum that's going to show up on, but I've done a lot of taxes over 30 years, and I don't know how that's going to show up on a tax form. They also say that it may show that he's not as wealthy as he says he is. Well, once again, you don't determine a person's wealth from their tax forms. You determine a person's wealth from their profit loss or their balance sheet, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So For someone to sit there, I guess maybe Ted's never done his own taxes, would be my response were I to be Trump, right? Because you're not going to find these things out in these tax forms. Now, what you might find out is some other things they suggested was what his income was last year, what kind of deductions he takes, how much he gives to charity. Those things we can find out. Mob ties? I'm sorry, Mr. Cruz. You, as a federal prosecutor and solicitor, should know. Well, state prosecutor, I guess. Anyway, as a prosecutor and a state solicitor should know that the tax documents aren't going to show up mob ties. This is not like Al Capone not paying his taxes or something like that, right? And it's not going to show how much the guy's worth. I mean, come on. And he sits there this is what gets him in trouble. And I think it's his campaign manager. What Ted Cruz would be a whole lot better off on doing is convincing people why people should vote for Ted Cruz and sharpen up his message. It's all about the fundamental message. Trump's got it. They ain't. And unless they get it, they ain't going nowhere. Let's see what Phyllis thinks, because she disagrees, I think, with me. Phyllis, thank you for calling tonight.
Hi, thanks for letting me speak.
My pleasure.
I don't know if you and the listeners are aware that the Bible gives many, many warnings against pride. For example, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble,
mm-hmm.
and humble yourself under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you.
Yes, I agree. Phyllis. Okay, but let me ask you this. Which one of these individuals that is left is not proud and egotistical? Which one? There well, you go. Okay, None of them.
No, wait, none of them.
It's all a matter of degree, if you will. It's all a matter of relativity. They all have huge egos. They're all as proud as peacocks of themselves. They all strut around like they own the whole world. They all do.
It's very, very obvious, though, in Trump.
Well, exactly. This is why I say Trump is a blessing in the sense that he has put for everyone to see in total display what this whole business has always been about. As a matter of fact, there's an article in one of the papers today, a Wall Street Journal article I wanted to touch on, where they go back to Roman times. And it was the same back then. This is why I say it is part of human nature what we are witnessing. As much as anything else, we are witnessing human nature at work.
Yeah. May I finish what I started to say?
Please do.
Yeah, go ahead. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Okay, Jesus also taught, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. In other words, those who have a proper view of themselves in relation to God and to others. He also told about two men who went to the temple to pray. One, a religious leader, listed his achievements in his prayer. The other, a tax collector and an outcast from society, confessed his sin and prayed, God be merciful to me, a sinner. And Jesus said that his prayer was heard, for everyone who exalts himself will be abased.
Yeah, well, see, the problem with all the problem, excuse me, pardon me for suggesting this. And certainly I'm not suggesting you shouldn't use this to guide you. You certainly should.
Yes.
Okay, the problem is this doesn't work in the political world, at least not at this time. And that's why I think Trump is the guy for the ages. Does that mean he's going to be the president of the United States? No, doesn't necessarily. But what it means is we are looking at different times, and the solution is going to be found in different places. And I think that none of these guys is as pure as they would have us believe. None of them. At least Trump is a little more, as you say, open and out about it. If you want to stay through the break, I'll let you finish. I know you probably had more to say. I'll let you do that. Okay,
thanks.
Stay with me, okay?
Okay.
And Carl's going to join us as well.
Oh, good.
Yep. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. We've got Phyllis on the line right now, and Carl's going to join us in a second. But go ahead, Phyllis.
Okay, thanks. And then in the Old Testament, there is the account of King Nebuchadnezzar, this very, very proud king. He had been warned by Daniel to humble himself and to be good to his people.
Yep.
But he didn't. A year later, walking on his rooftop, he waved his arm and he said, "See this great Babylon, this great city that I have made by my might and by my power." And immediately he was struck down. He became insane, acted like an animal. And finally, he lifted his eyes to heaven, it's written, and he praised the God of heaven, and he gave the honor and the glory to God instead of to himself.
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate all that. And as I said, I would suggest that people be guided by many passages in the Bible. In particular, in Exodus, it tells us, you know, exactly how we should judge who we're voting for. And the thing here is that Trump's message, if you listen closely, is not about Trump. He's not telling us that he's going to do all this. It comes out in his argument when people, you know, hit him up for specifics. He says, "I'm going to get the right people." He's not claiming that he has all the answers, that he's the king, that he's the end all. If anything, it is the other guys who are doing that. He's the one there standing there saying, "Look, you can come up with all your grandiose plans and sell them, but you ain't going to get it. When I get to the White House, I'm going to get the smartest people, and we're all going to get together in a room, and we're going to solve this." And he says, "Let's make America great again." It's an optimistic message that includes and inspires the nation. He's not saying he's going to do all this. He's saying we're going to do all this. This is, once again, part of the subtlety here that I think a lot of people are missing. And I can understand, because he's bitter poison. I mean, he's bitter medicine, or whichever it turns out to be. Maybe that was a Freudian slip. But it's bitter, and especially for Christians. But a lot of Christians out there are looking at this and they're going, you know, we got a couple of Christian candidates, but can they really get the job done at the end of the day? It's all about getting the job done. He is projecting the notion that he can get the job done. These other guys haven't done that. And until they can, I'm afraid that you're going to be disappointed if you don't think that he's going far, because he will. Phyllis, do you have anything else? And then I'll get on to Carl.
Okay. Simply, that's the reason why, you know, I won't be pulling the lever for Donald Trump.
That's okay. That's good.
And the thought that many, many Christians will be voting for him scares me.
Well, then what I suggest you do.
I fear that the end result will not be good.
Have you prayed when you pray, and I know you do, have you prayed and asked God to be frank and blunt with you why so many Christians are supporting Donald Trump? Have you done that?
I have in a sense.
Don't do it in a sense. Tonight, and until you get an answer, ask it directly. Because in my opinion, God is at work here. This is what's going on in front of our eyes is not the work of something that God is not in control of. So you need to ask God, why this guy? Why this guy? Okay?
Well,
all right, Phyllis. Thank
all
you.
All right.
God bless you, and thank you for listening.
Just a word of caution from my point of view.
No, and I think it's great, and okay. I'm glad that you put it out there, and I'm glad that you're at least reasoning and rationalizing why you should or shouldn't vote for people rather than just, you know, following on the bandwagon or something.
Yeah.
So I prefer your approach any day of the week.
Okay.
God bless you. Thank you very much. Okay.
Bye now.
All right. All right. Carl Jackson is up next. Carl, I know you want to get in on this.
No, not really. You guys have been handling it fine. I would just say something for disagreement in general with Ava. That's absolutely not true. Whenever I hear something when the Bible is misrepresented, and I love Ava. I know it wasn't intentional, so Ava, please don't get mad. You know that I love you. But the Bible never tells us not to judge. It says, do not judge, lest ye be judged. And that scripture is specifically talking about if you are involved in a certain type of sin, don't judge that person for the same type of sin. For the matter which you will be judged. So let me just make it emphatically clear, because no one that reads the Bible should interpret it that way. And I just want to make sure we clear that up. The Bible never, ever, 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 ever says don't judge.
He left out an ever.
Yeah, and that's a big misconception, and sadly, even in some Christian churches. So that is just emphatically wrong. So I just want to clear that up for anyone that says that. The Bible tells us to judge all the time. That's how we can come up with the word sin.
Yeah.
So let's make that clear.
Exactly. All right. Okay.
Okay. All right. And so I've been doing some research, and what Donald Trump is doing is absolutely brilliant. But I do have to say this to the audience. The reason why Christians are voting for Trump is out of fear. I'll just leave that at that. But I will say this. What Trump is doing is brilliant. And it cannot be duplicated.
Well, let me ask you real quick. Now you put that out there. You talking about fear of the world, fear of circumstances. How do you mean exactly fear?
Yeah, I mean fear of all of the above. When I listen to Christians that say that they're voting for Trump, basically, I've heard several leaders already say, well, once the Supreme Court decision came down the way that it did, and we understood that the government wasn't going to protect us, in a sense, we wanted a leader that made us feel like we could be protected, and so we wanted to look at the pragmatic solutions to these things, and that's fine. So what Christians are starting to do, which is very ironic, many Christians, they're starting to look for a king, and I think they feel like Donald Trump is that king. So I will say that. I was talking to several people today on that, and overall, when you sit there and you ask question after question after question, the overwhelming word that came to mind for me was absolute fear. But there's another thing that's going on, and it's amazing to me. I just wrote a column about this, but no one has considered this. there's several things that are going on with Donald Trump. And like I said, he's absolutely brilliant, because for anyone to be able to judge things in the political arena in the way that he has, I don't even care if you have his money, shows me that he has political savvy like no one's business. For one, let me ask you this. Do you know how much media coverage Donald Trump gets compared to the rest of the candidates in the field?
I'd say it's probably 2 or 3 to 1.
Okay.
In other words, two minutes to every 1 minute they get.
Okay. Yeah, it's greater than that. It's 7 minutes to every 1 minute.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so
and he only pays for zero of it.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, he gets 72% of media coverage. Do you know what was the percentage of name recognition that Donald Trump had coming into the race?
I would say that's probably 90-95%.
Well, that's really good. He had 93% when he came into the race, and obviously it's creeped up closer to 100%.
Right.
Since he's come into the race.
Sure.
Okay, no one ever. He has the most name recognition in the entire United States besides Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. So there's these things that we have to be able to recognize. I'm literally, what I see with Donald Trump is the fact that no one could beat him, really. So I see what Cruz is doing. I see what Rubio is doing. What they don't have and what they won't have even through the entire election cycle is 93% name recognition or 72% news coverage. So the only time that Donald Trump creeped down slightly was when he lost Iowa, and then Fox News and other media outlets started scrambling and making sure they would give Rubio more name recognition. And they're in full-fledged panic right now. So if you turn on the Fox News, it's basically all Rubio all the time. And when it's not all Rubio all the time, it's Trump. But they do that for two reasons. For one, they're still giving Trump 70% of the news coverage. They're giving Ted Cruz probably 5 to 10. So there's no way he can ever win, or Christians would ever feel like Cruz could win, because the overwhelming media has made it feel like it is impossible for Ted Cruz to win. So that's a part of it, and I'm frustrated with the media and even talk radio that goes ignored. Another reason that, sorry, my dogs are going crazy. Another reason that Trump can win, and it's brilliant in my opinion on his part, is, do you know how many of the first 20 states are open primary states?
The first 20, I'd say about half of them?
Yeah, over half of the first states are primary states, which makes it
open primary. Open primary.
Which makes it,
yeah.
Yeah, open primary and or an open caucus, which makes it absolutely easy for someone that isn't a conservative to win. That's why we've always gotten moderates when it comes to when we've got the Romneys, we've got the Bushes. And it's something that really has to be addressed, and I would say quickly, if the Republicans were to ever save their brand, the best way that they, well, I'm not even sure they could do it anymore, but the way that they could have done it was to close all of these primaries. So this is another factor that Trump factored in. When you have the first three states and the first two major ones, New Hampshire and South Carolina, are open primaries when liberals can vote and or so people tend to go more moderate, it makes it easier pickings for someone like him to win. So 93% name recognition, 72% media coverage, and the ability and the power to walk into a studio, whether it's Roger Ailes at Fox News or if it's MSNBC, and say, portray me this way. You can't beat that. So I just want people to understand out there, can Cruz duplicate what he's done? It doesn't matter if Cruz changes his strategy. It doesn't matter if they come with the perfect strategy. It doesn't matter if Rubio comes with the perfect strategy, even though Fox News is now realizing, oh, crap, we built a monster, so let's try to give Rubio just as much time and bash Cruz as much as we can. Even though they've figured that out, you can never duplicate platform. And so what Trump is doing is brilliant in this sense. He's recognized that. When I first decided to going to radio, it wasn't for the sake of radio. I wanted to write. I want to write books. I'm working on a book. And someone told me, you know what you need if you're going to be a writer, there's so many writers nowadays. What you need is platform. Platform will get you to the place that you want to go more quickly. So I was like, okay, how do I get platform? Ah, talk radio. See, this is what Trump recognizes. So we're having a lot of arguments that aren't fair, quite frankly, to have for Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, because they will never, as long as they live, have the same platform that Donald Trump has. And that's why I tell people, I just wish the coverage of Donald Trump was honest, because it is not. And what I will say, what Donald Trump does is brilliant. He figured out a strategy. He recognized the weakness in the Republican primary system. He built his platform, and now he can run, basically. But that's something that people have to understand. In all fairness to to Trump supporters, to Cruz or Rubio supporters, what you have to do is go on their websites. You have to match what they say with what they do. You have to vote your conscience, and you have to base on what you believe. Because the sense in the media, if I turn on the TV, if I look at the headlines, the other day I counted Real Clear Politics, I counted about 20 articles for Trump, one for Cruz, and maybe 8 or 9 for Rubio. That's what you're dealing with. So another reason why Christians are leaving, and let's be honest, 90% of America are nominal Christians, so that's another reason that's something that's not being shared. So you have 10% of Christians, maybe, in America that are born-again Christians. Those Christians will go for a Cruz or a Rubio easily. The Sunday or the Christians that are what they call nominal, where they're, I'll go to church occasionally. I'll go to church on Christmas and Easter. So this is just, I don't buy into the whole Trump is winning the evangelical. No, he's winning nominal Christians.
Well, but you've also,
expect that.
I understand. I got to go to the break, and I want you to stay over if you can. But what you've also demonstrated is the guy takes advantage of things that are, shall we say, there for him to take advantage of. Can we?
Okay. I totally agree.
All right. So that actually demonstrates that should he get to Washington, D.C., perhaps he could employ that same, shall we say, instinct.
Nope. Absolutely no way.
Because that's what the primary process is all about. You know?
Now, I can explain why. Absolutely
okay. All
no
right.
Way.
We'll stay on the line. I want to hear that explanation. All right. And I know you do, too. So stay with us. Carl Jackson. Carl Jackson Show on. It's Carl Jackson Show on Facebook, right?
Yeah. Carl Jackson Radio.
Carl Jackson Radio on Facebook. CarlJacksonShow.com. We'll be right back with more of.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to bid you farewell. I have to leave, but don't worry. Chris Hart, your host, will keep you on the edge of your seat for the next 2 hours. It doesn't matter whether he's right or he's wrong. He's always right.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, you're a conservative.
So you're
right.
Okay.
You're not left. You're right.
I'm on the right. All right.
Have a good evening, everyone. God bless you.
Aubrey's going to church, so he's gonna be leaving us now, but he'll be back next week. Okay. We're here. We're live, of course, as he said, for the next 2 hours, and then you got 3 more hours after that of Armed American Radio. Take you live right up to 11 o'clock right here on FM 105.5 and AM 660. The Answer, 407-774-8255 is the number. We got Carl Jackson still on the line with us. And Carl, you were describing how Trump has taken advantage of the field, as it were, at his feet, in the sense that he had, tremendous name recognition.
Smartly so.
And he doesn't even have to get out of his bed to do interviews in the morning on any of these shows because he does it by telephone. I oftentimes wonder where he's at when he's doing these telephone interviews, you know?
I know. It's pretty amazing.
You're absolutely right. But you think that he will not be able to employ that same sort of ability should he be able to get to the White House?
You know what? I stated that wrongly. I don't think he'll necessarily want to. Let me ask you a question. What is the number one thing that you want to see in a man in Washington?
In a man in Washington?
When it comes to a president.
Someone who can get, I would go down the list to get the economy going again, you know, secure the nation, rebuild the military. I would put it this way. Basically, turn the country in the opposite direction it's going now. Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right. So for me, it would be conviction, because here's what I believe. I believe that a man of conviction, a man that follows a core belief system, a man that is convinced absolutely in the power of the Constitution, will want to do less with the economy. See, when it comes to the presidency, I don't want a man that's going to Washington to say that I can be kingmaker. I'm looking for a man. The most important attribute in a president, the way the founders wanted it, the most important attribute in a president would be restraint. Not humility, not the ability to fix an economy, is restraint.
Well, but if you, I grant you that, Carl, but if you look at what Trump's message of how to fix the economy, it's restraint. It's to do. It's to do the same things, Cruz. It's to do the same thing. If you listen, see, and this is part of the problem with especially I think Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. They're on the same side on a lot of issues, on most of the big issues when it comes to immigration, rebuilding the military. The way you turn around the economy is you dramatically change the tax structure, and you also eliminate a lot of this overregulation. They both are coming from that. And in that
except that there's a huge difference.
Okay.
This weekend, you can go on my page on Facebook, Carl Jackson Radio. We put more videos on Facebook where they are on the same side now, but even as far as September of 2015 and a year ago, I posted more videos on my Carl Jackson Radio Facebook page where Donald Trump was on the complete opposite spectrum. Can a man change his mind after 70 years? Yes. Do I believe that he's going to change his mind on literally 70% to 80%? Within a period of time that he's running for the presidency? No, I don't. Some people may believe that, and that's fine. I'm not arguing with you if you do. But me personally, I don't. I want a man that I'm convinced has conviction. So are they on the same, are they running for a lot of the same issues as president? Yeah, they absolutely are. No argument for me with that. Are they going to implement the same things once they get into the White House because they have the same core convictions? No, they don't have the same core convictions. And it's astonishing to me that and I don't even care if people are for Trump. I'm saying fight for your guy, you're for Rubio, but I'm just saying based upon conviction, when I do the research and look at the record, I can go 6 months ago and I can go 12 months ago and find on 70% to 80% he's totally flipped.
I don't know.
Not Romney flip.
No, I don't
totally.
Know. Totally.
100%.
I don't know
flip.
About that, Carl. I've been reading the guy's books for a long time. Now, you can talk in terms of social issues. When it comes to abortion, he's always been against abortion, but he's been, if you will.
How are you, Chris, let me ask you this. He has the same stance on abortion as you have, pretty much, right?
In terms of, he has said for years and years and years that he hates abortion. He always prefaces anything he says about that he hates abortion.
How much money have you given to Planned Parenthood?
I haven't given a red cent to Planned Parenthood, but be honest with you.
Why not?
Because I ain't got any money. That's why. I am
so
flat dead broke,
Come on,
my friend.
Chris, let's be serious. Even if you had money, you wouldn't give to Planned Parenthood, because I know your heart.
Probably
and
not.
You're convinced.
No.
And you're convinced that it's wrong.
That's right.
So Donald Trump, it's not, this isn't me bashing the guy as if you want to vote for him, that's fine. But what I am saying is,
He makes no bones. Hey, Carl. He makes no bones about the fact that he thinks Planned Parenthood does good things. He said it the other night in the debate. Did he not?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So he's not trying.
You and I both
know, trying to hide.
He's
not trying to hide any of this. He's not trying to say. As a matter of fact, he's saying, look, they could have done some good things. I would disagree. I would say even if they are doing good things, the bad things that they're doing outweigh it. And in essence, he says, still says he would defund them. He wouldn't have the government doing this. As a private citizen, I don't know what motivated him to do that. Perhaps he did it as a favor.
Perhaps he did it because of his Christian values.
I don't know why he did it, but
I know this,
Carl. He has given to the broadest spectrum of charities that you can imagine. Perhaps. Wait a minute.
It's nonsensical, Chris. I love you. It's nonsensical. You don't claim that you have a pro.
No, what I'm trying. What I, okay, hold
and,
on,
and
hold on, hold on, hold on. What I'm trying to tell you is, Carl, for the people that are supporting him. And this may or may not include me. I've never actually said I'm supporting the guy. I've always simply been saying why he is where he is. And he is where he is because not many people are looking for a man of conviction. They are looking for someone who can get the job done.
What job?
The job of being the president of the United States and turning us back away from the policies and the course that Barack Obama has set us on. And I do believe he will do that if for no other reason than his ego will force him to do that. It will be his ego that will say, do different than Obama. and to me, that's a step in the right direction. Like I said, you just demonstrated to me with your explanation of him taking advantage of what is available to him is that he is an executive that knows how to get things done with what he has. And that's what we need.
And
that's what we need as president. That's what we need as president. We're not, as I've heard said by many people on Mike Gallagher's show, we're not electing a pope. We're not electing the head pastor of our church.
We're not electing a king.
We're electing a president. No, we're not.
But,
see,
but
I have faith in the Constitution. That the Constitution.
I don't have faith in the Constitution.
Hey, listen. Let me tell you something. You want to know? You want to know? Carl. You want to know?
90%
Carl.
I don't have faith in the Constitution.
I do. 90%
because
the Constitution. The Constitution
don't even
has
read it and understand it.
Constitution
I do have
has
faith in the process, and I'm hoping that the process will continue.
And the process is what's playing out. It's the process.
Ignore the Constitution.
It's the process that's playing out in front of us. The process that the Constitution dictates is playing out in front of us. It is happening, and it is because of the adversarial form of government. And by the way, you want to know who will be the protectors of the Constitution should Donald Trump begin to step out of line? Do you have an answer?
Well, I know you're gonna say we the people.
No, it's not gonna be us the people. It's gonna be Chuck Schumer and the Democrats up there. Because the Democrats will not let anybody from the GOP be a king. They will step up and they will do what the Republicans should have been doing for the last 7 years.
I disagree.
All right, let me
just make my point.
Okay.
Okay, I know what you're saying, and I've heard that argument before, and it makes sense, right?
I guess it makes
sense if we have a bunch of people that care about the Constitution. So, yeah, you're right.
They'll care about it. They'll care about it when it's in their self-interest. They will care about it when it's in their self-interest to care about it, and he will make it in their self-interest.
Okay, so I agree with you on that.
Okay.
What is their ultimate goal? Their ultimate goal is to have somewhat of a king. So, yeah, I understand what
their
you're saying.
King,
and I don't
though.
Totally
their king.
That.
They want their king. You see, the thing about Trump is he's going to be nobody's king.
We want our king.
No, he's going to be nobody's king. Nobody's going to let him be king. This is a ridiculous argument.
Chris, you are taking what I'm saying to the umpth degree, and I'm asking
you.
Well,
you're the one who said he wanted to be a king. You're the one who said that we're not supposed to be electing a king.
Okay, I'm saying what a lot of people want, including quote unquote Christians, is a king. They have no idea.
No, Carl. What people want is solutions. You're getting way off into the deep end. What people simply want is their lives to be made better. That's it. Bottom line.
All this other stuff
is just fluff.
By a president? You know this as well as I do. Our people, we're not serfs. We shouldn't be looking for a president to make our lives better. I want a president that's going to leave me the heck alone. And then I want, if you're talking about a president with solutions, okay, I know I made the case. I was making the case for Donald Trump saying he was brilliant. And I almost feel like you're attacking me for trying to make the point that I'm trying to make.
No, yeah, so what I'm saying is you just made the case for electing the guy.
It's totally unfair to compare a Ted Cruz or a Rubio to Donald Trump and say that they should try this tactic and that tactic when they don't start off with billions of dollars, when they don't start off with giving 72% coverage from 6 a.m. to midnight on news channels. It's unfair to say. I'm not even a fan of Rubio. I wish Ted Cruz was much better at packaging and marketing. I get all that. I wish they were.
Hey, Carl, let me ask you something. Let me ask you a question. You do a radio show, right?
Yep.
Have you requested Ted Cruz to be on your show?
No.
All right, I have. Has he been on the show?
Has he been on
my American Adversaries radio show?
No.
Okay.
No.
I've requested him on
Donald
numerous
Trump?
Occasions. I've requested him to be on. It doesn't matter. Trump's got the coverage. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Cruz is the one. Cruz is the one who needs the.
If you make an argument against one, then you should make the same argument against another. Because
who needs the exposure? Who needs the exposure? Trump or Cruz?
Okay.
All right. Again, I've done the same thing. I've done the same thing with that Marco fella for 5 freaking years. I've tried to get that little runt on this show. So don't tell me that they haven't had opportunities. They just don't take them. And by the way, every morning
This year is a different year.
No,
this
it's not. No, listen.
Yes,
these
it
guys,
is. We have never
these guys
dealt with
are
Trump
missing.
Before. That's why they don't know what to do with them. So everybody that gets media stuff, you know as well as I do. Sometimes they're scared because they don't know if they're going to mess up their campaigns. What Donald Trump is doing,
So they're scared, is it? So they're scared to come on the American Adversaries?
Yes.
Oh, well, maybe they should be.
No, I'm being in all seriousness. It is not right to make that comparison.
No, it is absolutely right. No, because they're the ones.
They're not like Trump.
No, look, you just made the case. Carl, please let me, Carl, please, for a moment. You just made the case that Trump had all this name recognition, and he had the media groveling at his feet. Did you not?
Right.
Okay. All I'm saying is these other guys then needed to go out there and get a little exposure of their own. And they haven't been doing it on my show. And by the way, I watch in the mornings before I go to work, I cover all the news shows to try to see what's going on. And MSNBC, anytime Trump calls that show, he puts them on the air. But guess what? Every time afterwards, they say, any of the rest of you guys who want to call in, we'll put you on. Give us a call. And guess what? They never do. Well, I take that back. I take that back. One time, Jeb Bush actually took him up on it.
All right. May I please concede that point, but also say, would you at least agree that in the past, campaigns, presidents felt like they had to be extremely careful and they had to go where they got, the most bang for their buck? To me, this isn't unreasonable. It may be stupid. I don't disagree with you on this. Yeah, okay, get as much name exposure as possible, but at the same time, I know that the campaigns are extremely guarded. Now, Donald Trump has shown, I think what Donald Trump has done better than anyone has shown that you don't have to be politically correct, and in a sense, you could be yourself. But at the same time, they don't have the power that Donald Trump does. Do you think, let me just ask you this, do you think that Ted Cruz can call into MSNBC and ask Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough to make sure you give me lightweight questions.
He shouldn't care. He shouldn't care.
Okay,
as a matter of fact,
answer the other question. Will you please answer that question?
I wouldn't say it again.
Of course not. You and I both know. Of course not.
No, but that shouldn't stop the guy from calling and taking the tough questions. You know. So what? Because Donald Trump gets the softballs and he's afraid he won't. He's afraid to call. Is that what you're telling me?
No, don't put that on him. I said that, not him. No,
okay.
So I'm assuming that if Donald Trump called your program, you would give him tougher questions. You would give him tough questions.
No, as a matter of fact, Carl, I've got a list of questions. Should I ever get the opportunity, they're not going to be the questions that everybody else asks him because they all ask him the same questions over and over again, get the same answers. So I am going to employ
a
different strategy.
I would love to hear an interview with you and Trump because I believe you would give tough questions, but it is just an unfair comparison or an unfair belief to believe that Donald Trump, wielding the power that he does, he has the power to go straight to Roger Ailes, for God's sake.
So what?
Give me ball questions.
All right. So here's
you really don't get a chance. You don't get a chance to poke at the man.
Look, be honest with you, Carl. If I'm Ted Cruz, I don't want softball questions. I want the tough questions because it is.
And he doesn't get them
because he doesn't go to. He doesn't give them the opportunity. He doesn't give them the opportunity to interview him. How's he going to get asked the tough questions if he won't give him the opportunity?
So he hasn't given you the opportunity.
No, he hasn't.
He hasn't.
He hasn't gone
on.
I have not. I have not. As even though I have repeatedly seen the people on MSNBC invite him, he has yet to go on that network, that show. All I can say is that they put the invitation out there, and if the guys don't take it, that's their choice. If they're afraid they're going to get tough questions, or if they see what you just talked about is another reason why people are sick and tired of politicians and same old, same old. When you ask people who is the most authentic, it's Trump.
No, it isn't. Oh,
yes,
my
it
God,
is.
That is so fake.
No, it
you
is not.
You cannot be authentic.
No,
you cannot be. I'm sorry. No, no, no,
these
no, no.
These are the poll
Chris,
numbers, Carl. This
you.
Isn't me.
That is a straight
this,
up lie.
This
you
isn't me.
Do 5 minutes of
this
research.
This isn't me
you,
saying
no,
that.
I'm sorry. That is a lie, Chris, and you know it.
No, I don't know it. No, I don't know it. Hold on.
Person, one of the most fake persons I've ever seen. And I'm not even talking about for the candidacy. The person, the man knows how to play people like a fool. Please, I love you, Chris. Don't come with that authentic lie. That man is not authentic. He is authentic in knowing how to play people like fools.
Settle down. I said a poll says that he is the most authentic. A poll says that.
Yeah, a poll
says Duke. A poll says it. So settle down. So what I'm trying to tell you is if these other guys are more authentic, they sure ain't showing it. He's the one who people are perceiving to be that. And in this world, perception is reality in this world. The whole time I've been saying, if these other guys would just take a little lesson from what Trump is doing, they'd go a whole lot farther. But they're not. They're running their own carefully plotted and planned campaign. And Rubio has, what's his name, Jeff Rowe, the tough guy, you know, the hitman campaign manager. That's what's got him in trouble. That is what's got him in trouble. Not the platform.
I won't disagree with that, but I know you'd agree that Trump changed the game.
Trump changed. No. No, he hasn't
changed the game.
Nope, he hasn't.
Okay.
It's like I said earlier in the show, and I don't know if you heard it or not, but now we're getting all these people. The latest one was this morning, Chuck Todd. Jeff, we're just going to have to go straight to the hard break. Pull the rest of the commercials in this half hour. Chuck Todd this morning was comparing Trump and what's going on with the GOP to WWE Raw. He even went on to say that Rubio's taken up the Ric Flair mindset. All right? Any guy, he actually got that a little bit wrong, but I'll take him, you know, that he watches. What they don't understand, and what I evidently haven't been able to get through to you, is Trump is just demonstrating what was always there. He's not doing anything different. You can go back to 2,000 years ago when the Romans held elections and see the same thing.
May I finish my point, please, sir? Yeah.
Okay.
And then let me clarify.
All right. So what is going on here? What is going on here is Trump knows how to tap into our psyches. These other guys, it is available to them too, but they are not prevailing themselves upon it. He is. That's why he's smoking them all across the nation. And that's why he's going to smoke them on Tuesday. It's nothing to do with his platform. It has everything to do with what he is doing with his platform. And they could easily do the same. They have chosen not to. They have chosen to play politics the same old way. And Ted Cruz has had many tens of millions of dollars run through his fingers and the fingers of his super PACs. And if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure you'll correct me if I am, he right now has more money than any of the other GOP, unless you want to say Trump. So, and by the way, he's only second, I believe, to Hillary Clinton. So he's got, you know, he's got plenty of resources. He's got plenty of resources. He has just not employed them, in my opinion, correctly. Had he employed them differently, this would be a lot closer race. That's my opinion. But, you know, you said Trump has utilized what was available to him to its maximum. I don't think the same can be said of Cruz, Rubio, or any of the rest of them. Now I'll let you clarify.
Okay. So, I would totally agree with you in that sense. Yeah, I think they could have done stuff better. But to say that Trump hasn't changed the game is absolutely crazy to me. That doesn't mean that he's changed Washington and the way the races are done. He hasn't changed the way the races are done for other people. Maybe they haven't realized it. Maybe they haven't caught on. But the way that he's been able to capitalize on stuff, it's stuff that people have never done before. I've heard comparisons to Reagan. I've heard comparisons to I forget who else. But I'm like, it's just not. I'm actually trying to give the man credit, and then you saying that I'm not getting what Trump. I totally get what Trump is doing.
Well,
I totally get that
but Cruz and Rubio don't get it. They don't get it. And their campaign staffs don't get it. They're missing this. They're missing the fundamental things that what's going on here. Yes, Trump has utilized that platform, but let's look at how he has utilized that platform with a positive, optimistic outlook. Optimistic message. We can be great again. We are America. We are the ones who can do this. We. And he pounds that
but
over and over and over. And by the way, I'll make one more point. Diane's been holding on this whole half hour. She wants to talk to you, and I'm almost out of time. So can I go right to Diane, or do you want to make one more point before I do?
Chris, I still love you, even though you're wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. As a matter of fact, I love the
give and take. I'm just playing.
I know.
I do love you.
I love the give and take. You know, I love this interaction. Diane, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I love both of you. Thank you so much, Carl, for everything that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Love you.
Thank you. I love you, too. I appreciate you being out there. That's for sure. Definitely miss hearing you over the radio.
Are you following him on Facebook? Are you liking him?
I am.
Okay, you know, you can do more than just like him now on Facebook, right?
No, I talk to Carl on a regular basis.
No, I mean, on Facebook, you can do a ha-ha. Let's see, I got an article here.
Oh, yeah.
They added a bunch more things besides like that you can do. It's like, wow, ha-ha, and stuff like that. So, anyway.
And I just want to let you know that that thing that I went to on Friday night.
The freedom.
Right.
Yeah.
It was all about get the vote out.
Good.
And
good.
It was all about get the vote out for Ted Cruz.
Well, that's good. But you know, I love it. You know, and you know, I'm good with Cruz. You know, so I'm good with either of those two. Let's put it that way.
It was all about God and country.
I'm not too excited about. All about God's country?
God and country.
God and country. Okay. Yes. All right. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Diane.
Thanks.
All right, appreciate you. All right, Carl, I'll give you the last word.
I would just say the media is trying to make it a Trump and Rubio race, and I'm very disgusted with the media. Help make it a Trump and Cruz race. I just feel like that's where the race needs to be.
I do, too.
I do too,
and I'm frustrated. You're frustrated. I'm frustrated too, because I think this race could be a whole lot different if these other guys had taken a different approach. You don't thump Trump. You out Trump Trump. And Cruz was on his way to doing that when he came here for the summit. Remember the summit? And he had this plan about immigration and stuff. He was outdoing Trump. He should have kept doing that, in my opinion. But what do I know?
There's no doubt he could have done much better. I trust me, I do tweet him and Facebook him regularly, including I was tweeting and contacting his campaign manager at the time, Rick Tyler. I had a personal connection with him because of articles that I had written.
Yeah.
And I was thumping him on the way that they were running the race and missing.
I
do agree with you in that.
Yeah, and I don't think it was
done better.
I don't think it was Rick Tyler. I think it was this guy, Jeff Rowe. I think he's the bad part. But all right, welcome back to the show, folks, and thank you for tuning in on this lively show here on Sunday night. And, yeah, I love that back and forth with Carl. He's a brilliant guy, and that really gets me going. All right, 407-774-8255 is the number. I'm Christopher Hart. You are listening to the American Adversaries on our three-hour Sunday evening tour. I've got a couple of callers on the line. I'm going to have to ask you to be a little patient because our guest has been waiting since the top of the hour, and so I want to get to him for a few minutes here first. This man is a counterterrorism expert. You'll be able to meet him and hear him speak tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Fellowship Church. That's at Redbug Road, on Redbug Road, just west of where Tuscarawas intersects there. So it's real easy to find. Just take Redbug Road east until you get right before Tuscarawas, and you'll see the Fellowship Church. So I'd like to welcome to the show tonight Frederick Saltjen. Frederick, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me. And an interesting night here. I've been listening to Fight Club over there.
Carl and I sometimes get into it. And Carl's impassioned, and he's got a brilliant analytical mind, and that just really gets my juices going, too.
Yeah.
But now you're going to give a presentation tomorrow night, Fellowship Church. Now, there's no charge for this, but you are a counterterrorism expert who actually trains up. Do I understand this correctly? Local police forces?
Yes, I do training. The training I do deals with lone wolf terrorism, and I detail the actions, the motives, and the results of lone wolves who have committed themselves to jihad. And I present case studies which show the process of radicalization and or Islamization, as well as possible counter strategies. Since as Orlando is full of soft targets and law enforcement's primary concern is stopping these types of attacks. So at least 60 terrorist plots targeting the United States have been foiled since 9/11, largely prevented by U.S. law enforcement because they are the front line. And the top five post 9/11 targets include the U.S. military, which is like 16 plots. New York City, 14 plots, mass gatherings of people, 9 plots, mass transit, 8 plots, critical infrastructure, and Washington, D.C. are 6 plots each, and those are the ones that we know about. Other ones have been thwarted, but you know, you don't hear about them, all of them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, does this use, do you profile, is that part of what you're doing, profiling? Not in the sense that you see people driving down the street or something like that, but I mean profiling in the sense of certain mental characteristics or something like that.
Well, not really. The profiling doesn't really work too well. I mean, there's certain things you can look for, indicators for terrorists, but in general. People say profiling is a bad word, but in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. So.
Okay. Well, since you obviously are concerned about the lone wolves and they seem to be more or less on the rise, mm-hmm. Does that is this just a media phenomena, or are you really concerned that there are more and more lone wolves out there?
Oh, I'm very concerned about this. I've been interested in this whole lone wolf phenomenon for about 6 years now. I started out doing some intelligence bulletins for our department and in-house training, and now I'm an adjunct instructor at Valencia College, and I do an eight-hour class there. It's going to continue to, it's going to continue on. It's going to get bigger and bigger. We've seen what we had in San Bernardino. We have officers being targeted, the officer in Philadelphia that was shot in his car.
Right.
Luckily survived. There was an officer or a deputy in Houston, in Texas, who was shot in the back and killed and murdered while putting gas in his car. So they're coming after law enforcement, and they're coming after everybody. So,
well, what
you're going to see an increase in these smaller attacks, these lone wolves, or these small independent cells, and I think you may by the end of this year, I think we're going to see something in the area of a large scale terrorist attack somewhere here in America.
Well, ISIS has certainly made it clear, the Islamic State, that they want to be a player, if you will, in our elections this year.
Yes.
And that would be one way to do it, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Are you encouraged by any of the candidates either side of the aisle, how they might approach this problem going forward?
The candidates that do want to close the border, that helps. We do have some people coming across the border that are, looking to do more than come to work or something like that. But, the vetting of these people, the Syrians that are coming in, I find that to be of utmost importance. And since you can't really vet these people, I think you need a moratorium on the influx. My wife and I were in Germany during the beginning of the German or the Syrian invasion there in Germany, and after about 2 days getting into Germany, about 2 days later, then they started the border controls and such, and then the influx was just massive. And they're having issues with just the behavior of these people, and having a lot of assaults and rapes and crime and such. And then we had there was an attempt on a soccer game in Hanover where there was a device found, and that was thwarted only maybe a couple hours before the game started.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So we don't need that here. And since, none of these people really... you're basically unable to vet them properly because we've never dealt with these people before, so you don't know what kind of person they are until something happens. But as I said, when we were in Germany, we saw the mess at the train stations and such, and the influx, people coming in, and then these people were not shy about their feelings towards Christians.
Right.
And they would refuse to take food or, drink from Christians. If it came from the Red Cross, they didn't want it. If it had to come from the Red Crescent, there were German women who would bring baby carriages there to donate, and they wouldn't accept them because they once held a Christian
baby. Infidel, yeah, right.
Yeah, an infidel in them, so.
Wow. By the way, we're speaking with Frederick Seiljan. Fred is going to be speaking tomorrow night at the Fellowship Church on Redbug Road, just west of Tuscaloosa Boulevard. And he's a counterterrorism expert, and then you'll be able to meet and hear him speak tomorrow night. Fred, do you offer in these seminars, these lectures that you give, tips on people, how do they sort of keep an eye out and take care of themselves, if nothing else?
I just do the classes for law enforcement, but this speaking engagement tomorrow is through Act for America,
right?
And they have a lot of good resources just on their website alone. But there's indicators that you might be on the lookout for. because we've had instances where attacks have been thwarted by people just being observant. Sometimes it's law enforcement, and sometimes it's just regular people, just shopkeepers or such. I tell people, don't think, just keep your eyes open, use some common sense. I mean, we had a ICE inspector here in Orlando who refused entry of the 20th 9/11 hijacker.
Right.
Into America, and then he was later captured on the battlefield, and then he was returned to. Well, he's captured on the battlefield, and he went to Gitmo.
Guantanamo Bay. And I think he was released, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, later. And then we've had, there's possible connection. There was one man, Miguel Santana. He entered the United States from Mexico at the San Ysidro border crossing in California. And while he was being looked at, CBP officers, they discovered that Santana was in possession of a copy of Inspire magazine, which is Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula.
Right, right.
And so if you want to be a terrorist, you generally shouldn't walk around, with the owner's manual while coming through a border crossing. So, but that was in 2012, and that was in the same area of the San Bernardino shooters, and there was rumors that possibly when that cell was interrupted or taken out, that they kind of put their plans on hold a little bit. The Malik and Farouk,
right, right.
Yeah, and later, and then we've had people. The attempt in Germany was thwarted because a shopkeeper had noticed somebody purchasing large quantities of hydrogen peroxide, which is used to make explosives, and sent in a tip, and then it all came together, and then that plot was thwarted.
Yeah, let me ask you.
Think that happened?
All right, I'm about out of time in this segment.
Okay.
I'm going to need to get you back during the week when we have our weekday show, where that audience is a little bit different. They'll want to hear this too. But one last question for you: this dispute between Apple and the government over this iPhone out there. Where do you come down on that?
I'm still not sure where the if the U.S. attorney or just wants the information on that phone, I believe they need to get that phone. That might help in the future. It just depends on who you're listening to, because Apple is saying that the government wants a backdoor into every iPhone.
Right.
So I believe in people's privacy and such, but that phone did not even belong to him. That was a work phone, and this person's dead, so there's no privacy issue.
I don't know that it's actually the privacy issue for that particular phone. Is what Apple is arguing is that this is a privacy issue for all of their phones. And everyone around here knows that I'm the one with the least amount of technical knowledge or expertise, so I have no clue as to why they can't perhaps retrieve the information themselves and turn it over to the FBI or something that.
I don't understand that either. But there is a court order. We need that. The law enforcement needs that information to find out, because they want to see if anybody else is involved with that.
All right. Well, sounds like you're going to have a very interesting presentation tomorrow night, and I hope a lot of our listeners show up to hear it, because
I hope so.
It's something we all need to be knowledgeable about. All right, Fred, thanks for being with us, and thanks so much for your patience tonight. I really appreciate
that. Oh, no problem.
And
it was
interesting. Okay, all right. I promise to get you back on during the week, okay?
All right. All right, great, Chris. Thank
all right,
you.
Don't Take forget. Care. Thank you. Don't forget, you can meet Fred tomorrow night, Fellowship Church, Red Bug Road, just west of Tuscaloosa. Doors open 6:30, presentation starts at 7, and please don't be late, because you don't want to miss any of it. Fellowship Church, Red Bug Road, just short of Tuscaloosa. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. And we just had a former professional wrestler give us that welcome back bump. In just a moment, we're going to have a current professional women's wrestler join us. In the meantime, 407-774-8255 is the number. I know we had a couple of callers on the line, and we will get to those callers. They're going to call back later on in the show. And I appreciate that so much. In the meantime, as I said, don't forget, you can catch Fred tomorrow night at the Fellowship Church on Red Bug Road, just west of Tuscarawas Boulevard there. And this presentation begins at 7 o'clock, and it's going to be about counterterrorism. He's a counterterrorist expert and trains up local law enforcement on what to look out for and how to deal with lone wolf-type attacks. Was going to do a contest tonight. Forgot to do it last week, and this week looks like we may not get to it. It's going to be a What Was That contest. And if we have time in the next hour, we'll do that. If not, I'll do this one for us next week. Appreciate your patience on that. In the meantime, I was going to throw out a – okay, all right. Well, I see we have our guest on the line now, so let's go right to her. I want to welcome – uh-oh, look out. I want to welcome to the show the dream. Have you ever dreamt of a genie? Well, I wanted to introduce to you a genie by the name of Melissa Coates. Melissa.
Well, hello.
Thanks for being out there. How you doing?
I am great. And I'm actually not only a genie, I'm a super genie.
A super genie, huh? Uh-oh.
Like, I'm sort of like a superhero, because, you know, I'm also a professional bodybuilder. So,
yeah.
We've actually added super to the name genie, because the kind of... point out, you know, my muscles.
Your extra abilities, God-given abilities, so to speak.
That's right.
God-given the talent. Well,
superpowers.
Exactly. Let me start here. You literally just got back from Japan.
Yes, late last night. I'm a little jet-lagged, but I'll do my best to stay on topic and give an interesting interview.
All right, well, I appreciate
that. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. How long were you in Japan? How long was your tour over there?
Well, this was actually a quick one. Sabu and I were there. I'm actually, for my super genie character, I actually assist Sabu with his matches. I, you know, help with his entrance, help with his during the match, giving him a little information here and there on what I noticed with his opponents. And the main thing is I supply him his chairs in a particular way where it actually takes some skill. It probably looks possibly easier to people than it really is, but the chairs have to be thrown in a specific way so they flow upright and very high. So it takes a little practice to do that. And actually, if you the first few times I was doing it, it actually does make your shoulders and your elbows sore. So, you know, you actually have to be in pretty good shape to deliver the chairs the way he needs. But, you know, I throw them in a specific way and keep them upright so he can grab them easily. And then, you know, he uses them to subdue his opponents. So I have a very important role within his matches. But yeah, Japan was this tour. We were there for 3 nights, 2 days. The first day we got there, we had an interview, and then the following day we had a show for FMW. And at the moment, there's a very big star there known as Mr. Onita. He's actually a government official, a film and soap opera star, and a professional wrestler with a long history, actually, with Sabu's uncle, the Sheik. Onita was actually the Sheik's young boy, or green boy, as it's called. This is in Japan. The you know, when a superstar comes over, there's a younger, you know, green wrestler starting out who's assigned to help the superstar out. And Mr. Onita used to carry Sabu's uncle's bags.
Is that right?
So,
no kidding.
Yeah. So,
they would act like sort of a translator and everything.
What was that?
They would act sort of like a translator and everything over there.
You know, I'm not probably, I'm not even sure how much, you know, the Sheik, I don't know, I'm sure he knew a lot of Japanese because he was such a big star over there, but,
right.
You know, and Sabu knows some too. He lived there for a couple of years. I guess there's some translating involved. Mostly, you know, they would carry the superstars' bags and I guess, you know, learn through the relationship.
Is professional
with the superstar.
Let me ask this.
It's like paying your dues. It's paying your dues.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
That's how a young green wrestler would pay their dues. Sometimes nowadays, like within WWE ranks, there's probably, you know, a little less of paying your dues in the past 10 years than there was before that. The business has just changed a lot. But to, you know, Japan wrestling is very old school. It's very well respected. It's very tough over there. You know, it's very demanding, and it's a really great place to make your name. That's where Sabu first made his name, was in Japan.
As a matter of fact, it's pretty highly claimed sports entertainment over there, isn't it? I mean, they really get into it.
Yeah. You know what? It's very physical. You know, people aren't messing around with that. You know, it's tough matches, and you know the women's end is extremely tough too. You know, it's not kind of more the easygoing stuff you might see in the United States. Although, you know, women's wrestling it's always difficult, but over there it's a, you know, far more physical.
Especially so,
it's a lot harder. Like you are going to be sore just from muscle. Your muscles are going to be sore from the fact that it's so much of it is
right.
Your own body strength working with another person instead of, you know, so much other people helping you perform your moves.
Well, speaking of body strength, we've seen the pictures on your Facebook page. You certainly have the physique, bodybuilder.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Did you start out bodybuilding, or does that come on after you started wrestling as part of your training program?
No, you know what? Actually, it would have been better wrestling-wise to have started wrestling and then built the physique after. But I was the opposite way around. You know, I made had a very successful career. I was very lucky. When I was doing professional bodybuilding, at one point I was ninth in the world, and I was also one of the most photographed women bodybuilders as well. I was on a lot of covers of magazines and swimsuit pictorials and posters and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I can see why.
Thank you. But it started there, and so yeah. The thing is, like, you know, once you're doing that at a top level, you pretty much can't do anything else with yourself. Like, you need to just do what you need to do, eat and sleep and lift your weights. So when I first started wrestling, it was actually difficult because functional muscle is not, you know, bodybuilding is about showing off your display or skeletal muscle. It's the muscle everybody can see, so you focus on developing that. But of course, when you're doing a sport, there's all tons of little muscles securing, you know, keeping your knees stable, keeping your shoulders stable. There's different movements. You got to be a lot more fluid. So it's actually difficult because, you know, I was doing bodybuilding at such a high level. I just focused on that. That's what I needed to do to be one of the top girls in the world. You didn't want to spend your energy doing other things, or it would take away from the energy you needed to grow your muscle. So when I first got into wrestling, it was difficult because, you know, there was functional muscle, like moving a certain ways, and, you know, there's, you know, muscles I had not used.
Right. You need a little bit more.
On a very high level for years, you know, so I had to.
All right. By the way, real quick.
Kind of relearn a lot of things.
If you could tell people your Facebook page so they can go there and like you and visit with you there.
Yeah, you know, I have four of them. I have three personal pages right now, and then there's a fan page. The main one I'm on, you know, you'll see it, facebook.com/, I can't remember how exactly it goes technically, but it'll be Real Melissa Coase. And then there's a couple other pages, and then there's a fan page. And my Twitter is at Melissa L. Coase, and I have another one that I recently started at SuperGenie111. So those are a couple of my Twitter pages. I have an Instagram, which is Melissa L. Coase. Somebody else had gotten Melissa Coase before me, and it was kind of funny because I on her page, she said, "No, I'm not the bodybuilder." I guess she had so many people asking her if it was me.
So many people looking for you, I guess, right?
Yeah, so they weren't sure. I kind of wish I'd gotten, you know, Melissa Coase first,
right,
but,
right.
You know, maybe I should have done Coase Melissa with it, but instead I used my middle initial. So,
right. Well, I understand.
And my website's melissacoase.com.
Melissacoase.com. There you go. Understand that you are due some congratulations in the sense that you have become a naturalized American citizen last year.
Yes. I'm actually Canadian. I got a green card through what I accomplished with professional bodybuilding.
How long ago was that?
Got me a green card classified under alien of extraordinary ability. So I was lucky because I, yes, alien of extraordinary ability.
There you go. Super genie, right?
Yeah, well, that one didn't get me it, but my work right. as a fitness professional, and model, got me classified as that.
How long did it take you to become?
And then so years later, I decided I wanted to be a citizen, so I was naturalized. Actually, July 8th. So,
wow, congratulations!
July 8th. Yeah. So it's good. You know, it's all worked out, and I'm happy living in the United States. So. It's a little more stressful living in the States than Canada, but of course, you know, the past few years with all the terrorism and stuff like that, you know, it's at a much higher level than the kind of things that Canadians tend to, you know, not too many people actually attack or blow up Canadians, you know, so.
Are you concerned?
We've had a few related incidents there, like in Toronto that were related to ISIS, but, you know, in the United States is, you know, runs the world basically. So there's so much more focus and so much more conflict that is aimed towards the United States.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a more stressful place to live.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also the land of opportunity, you know, right. as they say, the American dream. And
I was just going to say that. Yeah. It's land of more freedom and more open society, which makes it more vulnerable. That's, you know,
yes,
sort of the
yeah.
good with the bad there. But I'm certainly glad
Canada's great for that, too, you know. But, you know, there's a lot of immigration into Canada and probably a lot more into the United States.
Right.
And then Canada.
Right. When you were in Japan, how do they feel about Americans over there still, especially American professional wrestlers? Are you held in high regard?
Yeah, I would say so. That's why there's so many, you know, American wrestlers over there. They like to mix it up. And, you know, Sabu, of course, is extremely welcome over there because he became so famous within Japan.
Yeah.
You know, and he's better known there, actually, than he is in the United States.
Yeah, Sabu.
You know, he gets recognized everywhere. Yeah, because my super genie gimmick came about from me having a role as his valet slash manager.
Have you guys been working
his matches?
Have you been working together a long time?
Yes. Actually, about a year we've been doing this. At the very beginning, we would do some work together, and I was wrestling as Melissa Ms. Olympia codes the Ms. Olympia contest, the highest prize in women's bodybuilding, and I competed in that contest twice when I was doing professional bodybuilding. So when we first got together, you know, we'd go to shows and I would wrestle matches. And then, you know, he got this idea, this brainstorm one day to have me dress like I Dream of Jeannie outfit. And then, you know, because I guess he had a crush on Barbara Eden when he was growing up.
Sure. So who didn't, right?
That's where that came.
Who didn't? All right, well, listen.
I don't know. I didn't know it was that popular, but I guess it's
okay. Listen,
you know, men or boys of a certain age, I suppose.
That's right. Guilty as charged. Melissa, if you'll stay on the line, I want to reintroduce you to Sunny, Patricia Summerlin.
Fell into darkness. A call rang out across the land. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks, for hour three of our three-hour Sunday evening classic tour. That's right, you have the American Adversaries coming at you live on FM 105.5, AM 660, The Answer, and 1520 WBZW. Christopher Hart still here with you tonight. Jeff Sinna still on the bridge. 407-774-8255 still the number. And the super genie herself is still on the line with us. That would be, of course, Melissa Coates. And now, we're also joined by our very own California gorgeous lady of wrestling herself, Sunny Patricia Summerlin. Sunny, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. You want to welcome Melissa Coates back to the States, just back from Japan?
Oh, nice, Melissa.
Yes.
I bet
hey,
you killed it in Japan, sweetie. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's beautiful over there. So me and Sabu just had a quick trip over there for a show, and we just got back late last night, so I'm a bit jet-lagged. But,
oh, I bet. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
how cool is that? Good for you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so how have you been?
I'm doing good.
You guys know each other?
No.
Lucky you are in California. I wish I was there right now.
Yeah.
I'm up in Michigan right now. It's freezing.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah, you're where my family's at. Yeah, they're in Detroit. Well, I've got some in Detroit, Jackson, and Novi, Michigan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
We flew in through Detroit. So, Sabu's from this area up in Lansing. So I spend part of my time up here because I work with him. And the rest of my time, I have an apartment in just south of Atlanta. But,
okay.
It's chilly. I used to live in California. I miss it. I'll say that. I might move back out to California.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, you guys.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking about it.
Yeah, you should hook up the Super Princess and the Sunny Girl. That sounds like good. They're Super Genie. I mean, Super Genie.
Super Genie. Yeah. Yep. She's been on our show. I had her on After Buzz TV with Rick and I. I love her. She's great.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Melissa, we'll do this again. Okay. You take care of yourself.
All right. Have a great interview. I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care. And let's keep in touch. Look me up on Facebook and then come out because there's some good shows out here you should be doing.
Yeah.
I'll find you for sure.
And when you come.
All right. Take care.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
When you come to Central Florida, we want to know about that too.
Oh, definitely. Well, message me later. We have, Sabu and I have a show down in Coral Springs on March 21st.
All right. Yeah, we'll follow up on that.
Yeah, so we'll be there soon. So let's touch base again after the show. All right. Have a great interview. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. And you can once again find Melissa at melissacoates.com. Sunny.
Yes.
Well, there's been a lot going on this week.
Oh, my God. I know. What's up with that? The 3Ks. Yikes.
KKK. Yeah, let's start there. They showed up in town. I didn't know in Los Angeles that there was a chapter of the KKK.
Oh, yes, there is. And there is in Anaheim very much. That was prevalent because this is where it took place. I guess they wanted to rally up in support of Trump in a way with the illegal immigration. But what happened was they had a rally at Pearson Park in Anaheim, California. And there was a riot that, imagine that, broke out.
Yeah, imagine
KKK.
That.
It's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So there was three people that were stabbed, and 13 others were arrested when this rally erupted and the violence started Saturday. It was a small group of people representing, the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, I think it was about a dozen of them. And,
yes, yeah.
Evidently some
there were some protesters that showed up about 1:30 in the afternoon in a black SUV, all dressed in black garb with a Confederate flag that had patches on it that arrived. And I guess they all jumped out of the vehicle, and that's when the fight broke out. And moments thereafter, there was a stabbing, and there was another stabbing with a flagpole, which is interesting.
Okay.
But these KKKs are they're called the Loyal White Knights. And the leader is William Quiggs, and he lives in Anaheim. He's a resident, and he was the head of the group. And they were all about for the illegal immigration not to happen, so that was like in a favor for Trump. And they were there without robes. They believe in no robes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so that is really crazy.
Yeah, it is. They only believe in the hate, just not the robes, right?
Right, yeah.
But I was a little mystified as to why normally I don't know how they do it in California, but whenever they do one of these rallies anywhere here in Florida, there's always a police like escort to make sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen. I guess evidently that wasn't going on out there, and the spontaneous fight broke out is what it amounted to.
Yeah.
Was anyone, I know that the three were stabbed, did any of them die? Were they life-threatening injuries? Or?
No. As far as the updates, no. They were just stabbed. I don't know how severe.
All right,
and then the others were arrested. But, yeah, of course, they got really surrounded very quickly with their great police force. And, you know, David Duke, who is the head of the KKK, supports Trump.
He does.
And ironically, Trump apparently has no idea who he was, but I find that interesting.
Hey, he kind of, the way he sort of stated it, sort of in a, he was trying to blow him off, but he said it in a way that it was sort of like, I don't even know that guy type thing. But I think he was just trying to blow him off. But yeah, that's part of the problem in politics is oftentimes you don't know, you know, who you're going to stir up out there. And of course, a lot of people would say Trump should have known about this. But I would think that anybody who's as adamant against illegal immigration was going to get the attention of these guys, whether it was wanted or not.
Sure. Yeah, because they're all about that, you know, unless you're anything but white. Then, you know, that's it. We're going to jump on that bandwagon, which I'm surprised they're not over here with the Oscars with Mr. Al Sharpton.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because he was supposed to have a protest rally this morning, I guess, right down the street from where the Oscars are being held. The Oscars are at the, what is called the Dolby Theater. Is that what it's called?
Yes, yes. They've had that all blocked off. In fact, when I was going to my event the other night for Charity for Kids, they had it all blocked off. And, police presence were really strong there. And I'm sure he did, you know, to rally up against this diversity, having more diversity at the Oscars.
Well, let's talk about that because, you know, Chris Rock has made it pretty clear that in his opening monologue tonight, he's going to say a few words about that. Do you think it's appropriate for him to do it as part of the monologue, or is that just...
Well, let's see. I'm sure he will. You know, he's got the balls to do that. He's a funny comedian. He's never holds back on anything he says. And, you know, like most of our presenters and hostess and host do, they just go for it. And it's his opportunity to state whatever. It should be interesting at this point. However, you know what I find that they're saying they want their own Oscars? Well, they, like I said, they have BET Awards. We don't do that. We don't, you know, rally up and say, hey, you know, there's no white people there at the BET Awards. Why do they have to do that? Just because our actors, and they just happen to be white this year, to be the best actors to win. There was no black electives that won. That's all. There was last year, and they didn't say anything last year. There was the year before that.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well,
Denzel Washington, biggest right there. I mean, I think he's black, right?
Yeah.
So,
see,
I mean, what the heck?
Well, this year is a big election year. And that's part of the reason why Al Sharpton was there, is to make this a bigger political issue, if you will. And as a matter of fact, Joe Biden is going to be there tonight. He and his wife will be there, and I believe he's going to introduce Lady Gaga.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
So they're making this as much as possible without it being blatantly in your eye, if you will, a political event. So, you know, and by the way, I guess Lady Gaga wrote a song called Till It Happens to You, which is in the movie The Hunting Ground, which is about the so-called epidemic of rape going on college campuses.
Now, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
that was my other thing. I don't know if you're aware, but you know how they're talking very, very strong in Congress right now about what we had brought up in previous shows years past, which I believe in last year, the transgender in the bathrooms, the boy, they're
that's
on that right now.
That's happening in various places all over the country.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but now they don't know what to do.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the Oscars, and let's talk about the actual Oscars themselves for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
DiCaprio is, I guess, the odds-on favorite for his role in what was it called? The Revenant. Yeah.
Revenant, yes.
Yeah. But then there's Stallone out there with his role in supporting role in Creed. Do you think
absolutely.
You think those two guys will come away with their
They're
Oscars?
They're going to win, hands down.
Yeah.
And deserving of them both. And it's about time for Mr. Sly. You know, Leo, we know, is just perfect in everything he does. I myself have not seen that movie because I'm not into the violence you know, the Revenant, with the animals, the bears, and it's more of a man's film.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. And I'll say this about DiCaprio. You know, I don't care much about his politics, but he's an excellent actor.
Right.
There's no question about that.
Yes.
And Stallone, now Stallone, you worked with his mom, didn't you?
Yes, we love the whole family because
is she still around?
Was involved with GLOW pretty much. Sasha was there at the forefront with Sly. Sylvester would bring him to our wrestling matches in Las Vegas, along with his mother being our manager. And then Frank Stallone was there most of the time, more than Sylvester, because he was off doing movies.
Right.
And so they're a big part of our legacy and family. And it was a heartbreak when Sasha passed away. And, you know, Sylvester's handling himself well. And Jacqueline Stallone, I love her. That's where I got my astrology love was from her. She's a big astrologist.
Is she his sister?
Is what?
Is Jacqueline Stallone's Sly's sister?
No, that's the mom.
Oh, Jacqueline is the mom. Well, who is
Jacqueline? Jacqueline Stallone is the mother of Frank and Sylvester.
Right. Okay. And she's still around? She's still with us?
She sure is. She's still going strong.
Well,
she's
hopefully,
up there.
Maybe she'll be there tonight.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that would be nice. I don't know how well their relationship is faring, but they've been up and down. She's closer with Frank.
Is she?
Alone.
Is she? Do you still maintain contact with her somewhat?
I sure. I don't as of now. On Facebook is about it. Yeah, I believe Roxy is trying to get and reach out to her for the interview for our documentary, our next one with GLOW, to get her on board, because we have interviews with Aunt Kitty's son, you know, because Aunt Kitty we lost.
Right.
And family members. And they're all intertwined. Matt Simber is, Italian, so they're all, like, intertwined as cousins, family.
Right.
There, you know, so it's interesting.
Hey, real quick, tell folks how they can go on that cruise with you.
Oh, yeah, go to afterglowseaparty.com and just click on there. You'll see the prices and what's going on with all of us Glow Girls and what we're doing on there. And it's coming up May 22nd. So don't forget, book your room, book your cabin. It's well worth it. You're going to have tons of fun. We have a Bon Voyage party at the Queen Mary that's set before we set sail. We're going to have fun on that cruise ship and be scared by the ghost, I understand.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a haunted.
Ooh. Afterglowseaparty.com.
Yes. Right. Afterglow. And then come see us all, you know, on the cruise.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes.
All right, Sonny. Enjoy
Thank
the Oscars.
You. Have a wonderful weekend, Chris.
You too. See you next week.
God bless.
Mm-hmm. All right. And we'll see you folks on the other side of this short break. And away we go with the rest of the third hour of the show tonight. Welcome back to the show. Thank you ever so much for being with us tonight. And you callers who had called earlier and we had to go to the guest, if you'd like to call back now, now would be the time to do it. 407-774-8255 is the number. In the meantime, Kathy Santomassino has joined us. She's our marketing guru and also the editor of our Intel Brief, and we're working on marches right now. And she's in the studio with us with some more of her juicy, to say the least, presidential trivia. Got a lot of compliments about that section of the show last week.
I'm glad, because there are a lot of juicy stories about our U.S. presidents.
Mm, indeed.
And I love sharing juicy gossip.
I guess you do.
So anyway, starting out, great segue with the lady wrestlers.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I don't know if a lot of people knew this fact, but Abe Lincoln won a wrestling match and owned a bar. Did you know that, Chris?
Knew he was a wrestler. Yeah, he was a wrestler as a young man.
Well,
didn't know he owned a bar.
Well, Abe Lincoln, when he moved to New Salem, Illinois in 1831, he ran into a local bully by the name of Jack Armstrong. And Jack challenged Lincoln to a wrestling match outside of Denton Offutt's store. I guess that was like the general store at the time.
Yeah.
And Lincoln was a clerk there.
Right.
And townspeople gathered to watch and wager on it. And guess who won?
Lincoln.
Lincoln won.
Yeah, I believe Jack Armstrong wrestled in carnies and stuff.
Yeah,
like
I believe he was one of those. And Abe was best known as the Great Emancipator, as we all know.
Right.
He co-owned a bar with William Berry, And the duo appropriately named their saloon Barry and Lincoln, which was located in Springfield, Illinois. So that was an interesting story.
So Trump wouldn't be the first bar owner.
Not
to be
at all. Not at all. Even
Don't
though,
tell me they gambled in the back room too.
Well,
right?
Back then, I think gambling was permissible, but yeah, they only did it in saloons. On the riverboats.
Yeah.
But this was really an interesting fact I didn't know about. Bush, Kerry, and Hugh Hefner are all distant cousins. Okay.
The Bushes, John Kerry.
Well,
and
I know
Hugh Hefner.
President George W. Bush.
Sure.
And Senator John Kerry are very distantly related. They are ninth cousins twice removed. The two politically astute and well-educated men may have different political ideologies, but their love for their country and politics sheds light on a cousinly bond.
So where does Hef fit in?
Okay, well, they have a mutually distant cousin who, as we all know, is the founder of Playboy. That would be Hugh Hefner. He is the ninth cousin of both men. And twice removed from George W., and slightly closer relative to Kerry, being only once removed. When asked about his relation to the two politicians, Wild Child Hefner said, "Well, I feel closer to Senator Kerry." There you go. Now we know Hef's political leanings. Unfortunately,
so.
We know Hef's a liberal.
Say it ain't so. So is John Kerry, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my goodness.
Nothing left to say.
Next thing you're going to tell me is that John Kasich is a distant cousin of Bob Guccione, and Ted Cruz is a distant cousin of Larry Flint and Donald Trump.
To be continued.
All right, let's go to the phone lines, and then we'll get back to some more trivia here in a second. Al, thank you for patiently waiting earlier and then calling back. I appreciate that. Shows your dedication to the show.
I wasn't going to do it, but I felt like that Carl Jackson, he hopefully still listening, but, you know, he's sitting here talking about authenticity, and it just tickles me to death, because if you look at the Ted Cruz, if you look at the stuff he's done to prepare himself to become president, and, you know, denouncing the Canadian, back in 2014, his citizenship for Canada. And then
dual citizenship.
And then the tithing thing, you know, he's all about how big of a Christian he is, but he doesn't tithe. And then the huge donors, you know.
Yeah.
And they're all oil and hedge fund managers donating millions to his campaign. I mean, there's nothing authentic about that guy.
Well, in terms of the donors, you're correct. The biggest donor families that fund these super PACs are located in Miami, Houston, and Los Angeles. The ones in Miami have been giving their money to mostly Jeb. Now they're giving it to Rubio. The ones in Houston have been giving it to Cruz. And the ones in Hollywood give it to the Democrats. But that's where the lion's share of this money comes from. And, yeah, he's taking it. In terms of the tithing, yes, his income tax returns show that he doesn't show on there 10% that he's given to charity. However, that doesn't necessarily, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he does it and doesn't claim it. Let's just put it that way. But you're right in the sense that part of the problem that Ted Cruz faces right now in terms of the authenticity question is he's a politician. And he's doing these things that regular politicians do, which you just, you know, enumerated. And he's got to overcome that, whereas Trump, even though he says, look, I've given to both parties, I've played the game, he's seen as an outsider who has to do that in order to do business. So it's a totally different thing.
He's an authentic politician.
That's about it. You got that right. Al, thank you so much for listening on Sunday night. I appreciate you so much, man. You've been loyal all the way along. I really appreciate that. Okay, thank you. 407-774-8255 is the number. And I tell you what, let's try to get our contest in while and then we'll get right back to Kathy, because we didn't do it last week, and if we don't get a winner this week, we'll run it on through until next week. But instead of a Who Said That contest tonight, I want to do a What Was That? Okay? Here's the question. What did a joint resolution passed by both the House and the Senate, a joint congressional resolution, ask the American public to do in 1970? A joint resolution passed by both the House and Senate asked the American public to do something in 1970. What was that? 407-774-8255 is the number. $20 gift certificate to Cafe Positano and a My Liberty Threads t-shirt are up for grabs. Kathy!
Andrew Jackson was a murderer, the truth be told.
Well, he was in a war.
He was the only president to kill a man in a duel. In 1806, before he was elected to the presidency,
that's right,
in 1829, Jackson shot Charles Dickinson, who had accused him of cheating on a horse race, and then insulted his wife, Rachel.
That's right.
Okay.
That was more what he was mad about. It wasn't the horse race. It was more about his wife.
Right. Jackson was involved in as many as 100 duels, mostly of which were fought to defend the honor of his wife. I bet she was a looker. He also took a bullet in the arm in a bar fight. I don't think this was Abe Lincoln's bar, but it was a bar.
Yeah.
With Missouri Senator Thomas Hart Benton in 1813.
My distant cousin, I bet.
How about that?
And people think politics is rough today?
Yeah.
I mean, golly.
Well,
this is child's play.
We didn't have social media back then, so now everything is very instantaneous.
Oh, yeah. Andrew Jackson was very sensitive about insults to his wife. He would not tolerate them at all.
Well, I'm going to Google Rachel to see what she looked like, and I'll get back to you next week.
Okay.
Warren G. Harding was a pedophile.
Well, I guess Clinton wasn't the first one. Then,
well,
was he?
Mr. Harding.
Harding. Okay.
Was supposedly guilty of making love to a young girl in the White House. Her name was Nan. He did it on a regular basis in one of the White House closets. I guess back then they did have Secret Service agents, but they tried to stop his wife from beating down the closet door on one occasion because it got so rowdy.
Sounds like the Clintons all over again.
There you go. History repeats itself.
Indeed it does. Indeed it
well,
does.
Well, Richard Nixon, not one of my favorite politicians, was a card shark. And while he was in the Navy...
He also played the piano very well.
Well, this is interesting. While he was in the Navy, Nixon noticed that his friends were winning money in poker games.
Yeah.
He was always quite the opportunist. So Nixon had the best poker player in his unit and had him teach him how to play the game. Within only a few months, Nixon had won around $6,000 in poker games, which he used to fund his first congressional campaign. Well, at least he did it the honest way.
By gambling?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't take PAC money. He actually won money.
Oh, they say politics is screwy these days, right?
Well.
All right, I want to... Well, we're short on time, so you callers, please stay with us through the break. Sasha and Marty will get to your phone calls on the other side. I've only got 1 minute left, and that's not enough time to not be fair with you. So please stay with me, and I promise you, as soon as we get back, we'll go right to the phone lines and then back with more presidential trivia from Kathy Santomassino. How do you dig it? Where are you finding this stuff, girl?
I have my sources.
407-774-8255 is the number. Our question for tonight is, what did a joint resolution of Congress ask the American public to do in 1970? They asked the American public to do something in 1970. What was it? 407-774-8255 is the number. When we come back, Sasha is guessing something. Maybe she'll get it right, maybe she won't. In case she doesn't, get on the line and call us right now. In the meantime, you are listening to The American Adversaries. Don't forget, Armed American Radio comes on at 8 o'clock here in just a few minutes, and they'll take you live until 11 o'clock tonight. You can still watch.
The battle is heating up. You're listening to The American Adversaries on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz, if you can take it.
And we know you can take it. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. Appreciate you being out there. We're looking for the answer to our what was that question tonight. What did a joint resolution of Congress, this was passed by both the House and Senate, ask the American public to do in 1970? Let's go to Sasha on the line. She thinks she knows what it is. Sasha, thank you for calling tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, appreciate you being out there. What was it?
It was to reset the thermostat.
Sorry, you're wrong. You're
oh no.
Yeah, you're talking about when they asked people to set it down to 68, I think.
Yes, exactly, the energy crisis.
Correct. But that's not what I was looking for. And that was actually a request by the president, I believe. It wasn't actually a joint resolution of Congress.
Okay.
Yeah, this was passed as a joint resolution of Congress, and I'll give you a hint. I believe it was in the summer of 1970, and it asked for the American public to do something.
All right, I'll have to think harder.
Okay, you're welcome to call back if you figure it out, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. Appreciate you being out there. Hey, Sasha.
Yeah.
You still there? Have you ever, do you know about the Roxy Pacific stuff? Have we gotten you any of that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You using it? Is it working for you?
Well, yeah. I mean, it certainly is a nice idea.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you. And
all right.
Give us a call back if you figure that out.
All right. Thanks.
All right. So what did a joint resolution of Congress ask the American public to do in the summer of 1970? 407-774-8255 is the number. If you look up in the sky, you might find the answer.
Okay, Chris, how about let's talk about Academy Award trivia.
All right, lay it on it.
Well,
it on us.
You know, the Academy Awards started 1927, believe it or not.
Okay.
And a gentleman by the name of Emile Jennings, was the winner for the best actor in 1927.
What was the movie?
I don't have the name of the movie, but he was from Germany, and he was given the award before he left for his trip to head back home, and they actually handed it to him before he went back to Germany.
Right.
But I will find out the name of the picture. It was probably a silent movie because
that was
before talk.
I would think so, yeah.
But there was an Oscar who won an Oscar, believe it or not. Oscar Hammerstein II won the Oscar for his song The Last Time I Saw Paris in the movie Lady Be Good in 1941. So there was an Oscar who won an Oscar, but that wasn't the reason they named the trophy the Oscar.
Why?
And I have that info later on.
Okay.
I'll tell you the reason.
All right.
The first X-rated winner.
Ooh.
Remember Midnight Cowboy in 1969 with Dustin Hoffman and John Voight?
That was an X-rated movie?
That was rated X. It was the winner for that year for the best picture, and it was the only X-rated movie to win an Oscar.
Wow. Oh, John Voight was in that. That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even remember ever seeing that movie.
I think I saw it years later, and I didn't think it was
X-rated.
It was an X-rated movie.
Yeah, but that was when the censors were...
Right.
Yeah.
They were stricter.
A little bit more hyperactive.
I don't know if you remember the Barrymore name. Famous family
John,
in Hollywood.
John Barrymore, of course, and Drew.
Right. Now, there were brother and sisters that were actors by the name of Ethel and Lionel Barrymore.
Sure, Lionel, yeah.
Right. They were the only brother and sister to ever win Academy Awards for acting. Lionel won an Oscar for Best Actor in the movie A Free Soul in 1931. Ethel won the Oscar for Best Actress in None But the Lonely Heart in 1944.
Huh.
What about the first color movie to win a Best Picture? Do you remember?
Gone with the Wind?
You're absolutely on the money.
Yeah.
1939, it was the first movie filmed in color to win the Best Picture Award.
Yeah.
How about posthumous nominations? Now, this is a nomination and an award for people who died before the Academy Award was actually given. And there have been a number of people who actually got an award posthumously. For instance, the first person that won one was screenwriter Sidney Howard for Gone with the Wind. Great yep. movie, by the way.
Yep.
And then another famous actor who to this day is like the Marilyn Monroe of Hollywood. You remember James Dean?
Oh, sure.
He won in two pictures. He won for Best Actor in 1955 for East of Eden.
Sure.
And again the following year for Best Actor in Giant with Liz Taylor in 1956.
Wow.
And what about wordless winners?
Wordless winners?
Yeah. These were people who played characters that won awards but never uttered a single word throughout the entire film. And by that, I'm referring to Jane Wyman, who won the Best Actress Award for her portrayal of Belinda, a deaf mute, in Johnny Belinda, 1948. Phenomenal movie. You've got to see it. One of the best movies, I think, of that era. Sir John Mills, Haley Mills' dad, played the mute village idiot in Ryan's Daughter in 1970, another great movie with Robert Mitchum, for which he won the Best Supporting Actor Award. Most recently, Holly Hunter won the Best Actress Award for her portrayal of the mute Ada McGrath in The Piano, and that was the year 1993. Okay, back to where did the Oscar name come from?
Yeah.
Well, the Oscar statuette officially was called the Academy Award of Merit. The name Oscar is actually a nickname that has been around for decades with unclear beginnings, though there are several different stories that claim to tell the origin of the nickname Oscar. The most common attributes the nickname to a comment made by Margaret Herrick. Herrick, as the story goes, worked as a librarian at the Academy and upon first seeing the statuette, commented that the statuette looked like her Uncle Oscar. No matter how the nickname started, it became increasingly used to describe the statuette in the 1930s and was officially used by the Academy beginning in 1939. So there you go. There's your reason for the name Oscar.
All right.
How about a winner who was never nominated?
A winner who was never nominated?
Yeah. His name was Hal Moore. For Best Cinematography for A Midsummer Night's Dream in 1935, Moore was the first and only person to win via a write-in vote.
Huh.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I don't know how that stuff works.
Okay. The phrase "and the winner is" has been discontinued. At the 61st Academy Awards held in 1989, the Academy decided to replace the trademark phrase "and the winner is" with the phrase "and the Oscar goes to." Did you notice that?
Now, why? Because they don't want to shame the people who didn't win?
Well,
is that it?
Maybe it is politically correct. Maybe it started back in the 80s.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, well, they're fixing to get a lot more politically correct, it looks like.
Well, here's one that I remember vividly. Back in 1974, do you remember when the streaker, a man named Robert Opel, ran across the stage naked, flashing the peace sign, while David Niven was on stage introducing the Best Picture category?
That one, I missed that one.
This was priceless. When the streaker ran behind him, thinking quickly on his feet, Niven remarked, "The only laugh that man will ever get in his life is by stripping and showing his shortcomings." Ha ha, get it? Apparently he wasn't that well endowed. But anyway, David Niven with his dry British wit,
oh, yes.
He nailed it.
Oh my gosh. And almost like he knew it was going to happen.
He knew what was going to happen. How about a 20-year wait to actually get an award? Did you hear of this one? This was amazing to me.
Mm-mm. No.
In a strange turn of events, Charlie Chaplin's movie Limelight, which was produced in 1952, won an Academy Award in 1972, 20 years after its first release. According to the Academy's rules at the time, a movie could not be considered for an Academy Award until it had played in Los Angeles. When Limelight finally played at a theater in L.A. in 1972, it then became eligible for an award.
Huh.
One little technicality that was long waited for Mr. Chaplin.
Sounds like the Democrats run the Academy, whatever it is, organization.
You may be right.
All right, so is that it for Academy
That's
Trivia?
That's it for Academy Trivia, and after the show, guess what I'm going to be doing?
Watching the awards.
Watching the awards.
All right, so you going for DiCaprio?
Probably.
Know, not, he's, isn't he a big PETA guy? I meant to ask
Sonny
about
he's
this.
He's a very liberal character.
And he's
into
big, I know he's into global warming. I thought he was also a PETA guy. Because for this movie, now for this movie, the guy, once again, he's a good actor. And one of the things good actors do is they get into the part, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And he got really into the role, even to the point where he ate evidently raw liver from a bison. And
I heard it was a bear, but...
Well, I'm thinking, any animal? Raw liver?
Well, you know.
This is the PETA guy?
In some countries, that's considered a delicacy.
Well, isn't that going a little too far to get yourself ready for the role? I don't know. He's going to get an Oscar out
If
of
he
it.
Doesn't get it, I think it's rigged because I All heard right. he was All incredibly talented.
When we come
talented.
Back, we got a couple more guesses for our what was that contest? We'll get back to that on the other side. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. For the last segment of the show, we're rapidly running out of time here. And don't forget, at 8 o'clock, the Armed American guys come on, and they'll take you live until 11 o'clock. And please don't forget, every Saturday afternoon, you got some great live radio right here, starting at 1 o'clock with Talk to the Experts, hosted by Aubrey Kahn. And then at 3 o'clock, you got Arms Room Radio. Mike and the guys over there, Mike and Kevin and Earl and the guys. So a lot of great live radio here on the weekends. Appreciate you tuning in. All right, we're looking for a winner to our What Was That contest tonight. And the question is, what did a joint resolution of Congress passed in 1970 ask the American public to do? So we got on the line with us right now, Ron, who thinks he has the answer. Ron, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I came up with the second one, but I guess they wouldn't make a joint resolution. I'm going to say to pray for the safe return of the Apollo 13 astronauts.
That's what it was.
Well, thank you, sir.
To pray for the safe return of the Apollo 13. The Pope asked for prayers. It was the whole world was watching that summer.
Yep.
And, of course, we got them back safe and sound. All right, Ron, you're the winner.
Hey,
we appreciate
go home
you.
Tonight and bang on that instrument.
I'll be doing that, the old Gibson. All right. Thanks, man.
Right,
got to let you go,
you.
Though, because I'm short on time.
All
Congratulations.
Right,
that's right. It was. It was a joint resolution to ask the United States to pray. Perhaps they'll pass another one right now. All right. Tim is on the line. Tim, thank you for calling being out there.
Hey, Chris.
Howdy.
You were short on time, huh?
Yeah, a little bit, but go right ahead.
All right. I just want to say I thought that was a fantastic interview you did earlier with Glenn Beck. That was terrific, and I just want to know. I always thought Glenn Beck was a crackpot, you know.
Well, Easy does it on Carl. Carl, I love Carl, and he's just as passionate, and he's got a great analytical mind. He's as passionate like me.
Yeah,
and he's
I don't
got a
know.
Great analytical mind, and Carl is very, very knowledgeable, and I just love to engage with him in that.
Yeah, you were good. You gave him back and forth, defending the guy.
Go ahead.
70% of media coverage doesn't mean anything if half of it's negative. And every time you turn Trump on, it's a negative slam. You know, they start everything with, oh, yeah, Trump, who said all Mexicans are rapists, said today. You know, I mean, it's always, they always preface, everything he says with a slam, and all the panels are just nasty to him. But one of the tweets he had on his website that I follow, it says, it's amazing to me, one of the tweets said, how Cruz can look straight in the camera and lie, you know?
Yeah.
And he was on Chris Wallace today. He did the exact same thing. And he got in a fight with Chris Wallace.
Yeah.
Today, I don't know if you saw it.
I did.
That was amazing. He's, I didn't run a dirty campaign. Anyway, my call is real quick. Marco, We don't have much time left. I would just say that if you read that thing by Steve Miller, he was Jeff Sessions' top advisor.
Right.
If you just read that, if you get a chance, it links on Drudge.
Yeah, it's pretty damning.
Did you read that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish the people would know about that, because nobody seems to know about that, and Trump's not saying about it. So,
no, he has. Yeah.
And I would just, one more last thing, lastly, I would just say to Mike Walker down there in Lantana with the National Enquirer, if you got the goods on Marco, this is the time to put it out before the primary, if you know, if he's dancing in these gay bars topless. If you got the photos, please put them out so the people of Florida and the Tea Party people, you know, can see that. I would appreciate it.
I think most people are pretty wise to him, but I'm not so sure I want to see that.
Oh, he looked good in those pictures, didn't he? Didn't he look good in the pictures this week?
Oh, my gosh.
He had the nice hair going and the tongue. Yeah, he looked pretty good. And it's a foam bar, so I'm wondering if we have any foam bars in town. Do you think he'll be hanging around?
I don't know, because I don't know.
All right, good interview today.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. God bless you. Appreciate you being out there. All right. So, but like Kathy was pointing out earlier with Jackson and these guys, what's going on today is just pretty much child's play compared to back those days. All right. But speaking of back in those days, you got something else for us, don't you?
Real
quick, tomorrow's the leap day of leap year.
Yes, we're in leap year.
And by the way, it's the first day of early voting. You can have already voted by absentee ballot, and you can still do that. But tomorrow starts early voting, and pretty much all of the branch libraries are the voting locations. And also the voting offices. But anyway, so leap day, leap year.
It's a very complicated equation, and I'm just going to basically...
It's an astronomical thing.
It's based on the Gregorian calendar,
right?
And the Julian calendar featured a 12-month, 365-day year with an intercalary day inserted every fourth year at the end of February to make an average year of 365.25 days,
right.
Okay?
Right.
But because of the length of the solar year... It's actually 365.242216 days.
Right.
And the Julian year was too long by 0.0078 days, or 11 minutes, 14 seconds.
Which would add up over time.
Yeah, this doesn't seem like a lot until you do it over the course of centuries and it adds up.
Right.
Until, like, the 16th century, the vernal equinox was falling around March 11th instead of March 21st.
Vernal equinox.
So Pope Gregory the 13th in 1582 adjusted the calendar by moving the date ahead by 11 days and by instituting the exception to the rule for leap years. So this new rule whereby a century year is a leap year only if divisible by 400 is the sole feature that distinguishes the Gregorian calendar from the Julian calendar.
Okay.
Okay? So most years that can be divided evenly by four are actually leap years. That's why you get one every 4 years.
Right.
I
just remember it's always the presidential election year.
Okay, well, that's a good way to remember it.
Yeah.
What are your chances of being born on a leap day? You have any idea?
Oh, boy. They've got to be pretty astronomical.
Actually,
100,000 to 1?
It's not that high, which
really
amazed me. It's 1 in 1,500.
1 in 1,500?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And there's about 187,000 people in the U.S. and 4 million people in the world who were born on leap day.
Now, you see, that I would think that would be more than 1 in 1,500.
No, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But what about a birthday party, like if you're born on a leap day.
I
wish I were, because then I could actually lie about my age and be honest about it.
You'd be 15 years old
at the age
of 60.
Well, if you were born on a leap year, do you get your driver's license on February 28th or March 1st?
Right.
And it's an ambiguous question that is decided, actually, by each state.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know this?
No.
Okay, I stumped you, Chris, which is amazing. Most states consider March 1st the official day. For instance, the Michigan Vehicle Code states that people born on February 29th are deemed to have been born on March 1st. And
say that again.
Okay.
In what now?
In Michigan, the Vehicle Code states that people born on February 29th are deemed to have been born on March 1st.
Is that the way here in the state of Florida?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
If there's somebody out there who was born.
Anybody who's a listener, we'd like to talk to you and see when you celebrate your birthday.
Yeah, never thought about that, but it would be something that could possibly be problematic.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that's leap year trivia, eh?
Exactly.
All right.
So happy leap year to everybody, and I'd like to shout out to my friends at Colonial High School that I had dinner with last night. Sorry if I got a little crazy.
Uh-oh.
But you know how I get when I talk about my two favorite topics, sex and politics. Look out.
Oh, boy. And last week you had them wrapped together there.
I did, but that's the best way. It's like an Oreo. They go together really well.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The chocolate wafer and the white cream.
Okay. I'm not even going to go there. You know, baseball season's getting ready to kick off, spring training. You know, this was one of my favorite times as a kid. One of my father's brothers would come to town, and we would always go out to Tinker Field and watch the Twins play a couple of games. And they always came into town when the Atlanta Braves were going to be coming to Orlando to play. So I still am nostalgic about those great days in Orlando when we had great spring training baseball. It's not the same now with the Braves out at the Disney Complex. And, heck, I think they're getting ready to move. And, of course, Tinker Field is gone now. I drove by it the other day, and it's the clay infield is there, but everything else pretty much is gone. But anyway, we like to leave you each Sunday night with a selection from Lloyd Marcus's great CD, God, Country, and Love. And what would, you know, the United States and God, Country, and Love be without baseball, right? Or football or whatever. But anyway, Lloyd has written a great song called Iron Man. No, it's not that Iron Man. This is about Cal Ripken Jr., of course, who set the Iron Man record for consecutive games played in the Major League Baseball. So here in a minute or so, we're going to leave you with the cut. And once again, you can get this CD. It's an excellent CD. You've heard the cuts on the show here. You can go to his website, LloydMarcus.com. That's Lloyd with two L's, LloydMarcus.com, and buy his CD, God, Country, and Love. And Lloyd is a great Tea Party guy. He's a huge fan of Ted Cruz, and we just love Lloyd Marcus to death. And so we certainly hope you'll enjoy this selection. And don't forget, Arms Room Radio is coming up here in just a few minutes, and they'll take you live until 11 o'clock. And, of course, they've got a lot more to talk about this week than they did last week. There have been more mass shootings. Hillary Clinton's hinting about more gun control laws. And of course, there's just all kinds of political things that they bring into the conversation as well. I want to thank all of you for being out there tonight, especially want to thank my colleague Carl Jackson. I really enjoyed our give and take there tonight. And that's what America is all about, sharing ideas in an impassioned way. And it's better that we do it without dueling with one another. Like
absolutely.
Back in the day. But I love Carl Jackson, and you can find him at Carl Jackson Radio and CarlJacksonShow.com. Carl Jackson Radio on Facebook. And keep your eyes and ears open, because we got some announcements in regard to our website coming up soon. But we're going to leave you now with Iron Man by Lloyd Marcus about Cal Ripken. Great job, Kathy. Thanks, everybody. And that's going to wrap it up for tonight. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow. We'll have Abe Katzman on the show. And don't forget to catch Fred at the Fellowship Church on Red Bunk Road tomorrow, 7 o'clock, Counterterrorism. We'll be back. See you then. Night, everybody.
From Aberdeen, working from dusk to dawn, trying to make the team, dreaming of the day he fly with the birds and hanging on to his daddy's every word. Come on and give a hand to the Iron Man. And though his hair was graying, he never grew old.
just in time to save the day. Come on and give a hand to the Iron Man. He's the kind of guy Americans adore. You gotta give a hand to the Iron Man. He's the hero we've been longing for.
At AM 660, The Answer. WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. The official radio station of Decision 2016.